Ladies and gentlemen, it's 5:03 on February 26, 2020. This is the Carson City Planning Commission's monthly meeting. Call the roll, please.
Vice Chair Borders.
Present.
Commissioner Doors.
Here.
Commissioner Esswein.
Here.
Commissioner Perry. Commissioner
Here.
Preston.
Here.
Commissioner Tingle.
Here.
Commissioner Wiggins.
Here.
A quorum's present.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's see. Commissioner Preston, will you lead us in the pledge, please?
Of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topics that are relevant to and within the authority of the Planning Commission, including any matter that is not specifically included on the agenda at this time. But before I take any public comment, I would first like to welcome to the dais up here our newest member, Mr. Rich Perry. Rich, would you like to say something at all? I'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chairman Borders. My name is Rich Perry. This is my first meeting here. I was just appointed by the City Council last week when I put in an application. I've lived in Carson City for 6.5 years. I lived in Lakeview with my wife, and we moved here 6.5 years ago from Elko, where we lived for 28 years. And my day job is as the administrator for the Nevada Division of Minerals. And that's for another 5 weeks, because on April 1st, I'll be retiring from that. And I was looking for an opportunity to do something in city government, and had served previously on the city council or the City of Elko Planning Commission when I was out there. So I really enjoy this opportunity to be here and appreciate the opportunity to serve the public. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. We look forward to having you join our club. We'll teach you the handshake later. Is there any other public comment at this time? All right. Hearing none, then for possible action approval of the minutes of January 29th, 2020 workshop and the January 22nd, 2020 regular minutes. So are there any additions or corrections?
Vice Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
I do have a correction on the motion for... it's on page 12. When it said the motion and the votes, it was ayes, and it only shows Commissioner Doors as saying aye. And the vote was 2-4-0, and my vote is not indicated as an aye.
All right. Any other questions or any other questions, additions or corrections to the minutes? Can I have a motion, please? Do we accept them both together? Or separately?
One has a correction.
Okay. How about the a motion for the workshop minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
I second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
Yes.
Yes.
Since I was not part of that meeting, I abstain.
Okay. The vote is 6-0-1. All right. Now for the minutes of. All right. Did you abstain also?
I'm abstaining.
All right. The vote is now 5-0-2. All right. January 29, 2020 minutes with the correction of Commissioner Tingle's vote on the last item. On page 12, is there any other additions or corrections? Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Mr. Perry?
One abstention.
All right. The vote on those minutes is 601. Modification of the, excuse me, the agenda. Items may be, on the agenda may be taken out of order. The public body may combine two or more agenda items for consideration, and the public body may remove any item from the agenda or delay discussion related to an item on the agenda at any time. Lee, do we have any?
Staff has no proposed changes to the agenda.
All right. I would like just for the public to know, in case anyone is here for item, is it six? Yes, number six. That item will not be considered any sooner than 6 p.m. So if you're here for that item, you can go outside if you like. You can hang around if you want to, but we will not consider item six until after 6 p.m. If we get done with our agenda before then, we'll be adjourned until 6. All right. Item E1 for possible action, discussion and possible action regarding a right-of-way and access easement abandonment on property located at 4110 Country Line Road, APN 007-201-05.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a request for the abandonment of a right-of-way and access easement. In 2004, the city, through a gift of easement, acquired a permanent well and access easement right-of-way for maintenance of the well, pipeline, and electrical conduits. In August 2019, the board authorized the well to be returned to private ownership. As the city no longer owns the well, it no longer needs the access and the right-of-way easement. The Board of Supervisors is authorized to abandon the right-of-way. The Planning Commission makes a recommendation to the board. In considering the request, the Planning Commission considers the 7 required findings. Staff has made these findings in the affirmative, as noted in the staff report, and is recommending that the Planning Commission recommend approval of this requested abandonment to the Board of Supervisors, subject to the conditions of approval. I'm happy to go more in depth on anything should the commission want me to. Dan Stuckey, the city engineer, is present on behalf of the applicant. And with that, I'll take questions if you have any. Thank you.
Are there any questions for staff? How about the applicant? Do you have any statements you'd like to make? Okay. Does the public have any comment at this time? Hearing none, come back to the board. Is it?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion. I move to recommend that the Board of Supervisors approve AB 2020-0001 based on the findings and subject to the conditions of approval contained in the staff report.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries this time 7-0. Item E2, LU 2019-0082 for possible action and discussion regarding a request for a special use permit for a sign on property zone Public Community PC located at 813 North Carson Street, which is the Children's Museum, APN 002-164-01. Hope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The applicant is proposing to erect a 3.5-foot wide by 3-foot 7-inch sign at the northwest corner of the property. The sign will include a video, and I have the picture up. If you've been to the property, that's the sign that's there now. This sign would be replaced with the new sign. The sign would include a video screen and an overall height not to exceed 8 feet. Because this is in the public community zoning district, the sign may only be established upon approval of the special use permit. The site is also in the historic district, and the sign was subject to review by the Historic Resource Commission. The Historic Resource Commission approved the sign because it included removal of signs that were blocking the building, and those signs have been removed. That you might remember they were on the railing in front of the building. And the proposed sign does not block the primary facade of the building. The tree that's located, and I'll go back to that other slide so you can see the tree. The tree creates a visual separation between the building and the sign, thus ensuring the sign does not compromise the historic resource. When you consider a special use permit, you're considering the 7 findings of fact. Staff has reviewed those findings of fact in the staff report, and we have been able to make those in the affirmative. Staff is recommending approval of the special use permit. Casey Gillis, who is the chairman of the board of the Children's Museum, is present, and I'm happy to go more in depth on anything if the board or the commission would like me to, and Ms. Gillis is present.
Any questions for staff?
I just have one.
All right.
So there's no visual impairment to side street traffic trying to access Carson Street?
There's a condition of approval, I believe, that says that once they go to erect the sign, they have to demonstrate that they won't be in the side triangle. And I'll find that condition. Actually, that's a standard. And so because it's a city standard, it didn't have to be in the conditions of approval. But when it comes in for building permit, our engineering staff will review that.
Hope, on condition number 7, if you look at the last page of our application, which is that picture on the wall, how tall is the sign?
Okay, and the picture on the wall, and Casey can speak to this as well, what was prepared as the graphic had erroneous numbers, and Casey is the one who came in and replaced those numbers. So if you look at the handwritten 8 feet, the applicant is proposing that the sign not exceed 8 feet.
Yes, but that's only true if you take those measurements as tenths and not inches. If you take the original entry and add all those up, you get 7 feet, 7 inches. If you convert those to tenths, you get 8 feet. So I'm wondering which is the height of the sign. Because
it is probably, as drawn, the 7 feet, 7 inches. But I'll have Casey speak specifically to that because she is the one who marked up the dimensions.
Okay. Is the applicant here? Have you read the 7 conditions?
Yes.
And are they acceptable to you?
Yes, I went over them.
Okay.
And yes, I'm Casey Gillis. I'm president of the board of the museum. This is Christine Brandon, our director, and Steve Reynolds, who is helping us with the sign.
Okay. Ms. Gillis, could you explain the disparity in the... They're both underneath the 8 feet, which is what's requested, but it's confusing, and we'd like to have it correct, whatever it is.
Okay. The base, we needed it to be 4 feet, the beige, because we realized the way the fencing was, we'd be too low. So that is takes us above the fencing, and then our museum sign and that. And when we figured it, we thought it would be 8 feet. I'll be honest. Steve and I went over it and, you know.
Yes, Steve Reynolds speaking for the applicant. If we could change the specific language just to say not to exceed 8 feet, then that's what we would also put on the application for the sign permit.
Well, that is the condition. It won't exceed 8 feet. But we have one piece of paper with two different measurements on it.
It wouldn't surprise me if the sign came in at 7'10".
Okay.
I mean, it's...
All right. Are there any other questions for the applicant? Okay. Thank you. Any other comments from the public?
Could I just make a quick note?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You mentioned about the traffic concerns, and one of the things that's true there is that is a one-way street, so there's only access from Carson Street into that side street. There's not access back to Carson. So, okay.
Thank you all very much. Anyone else in the public have a comment? Okay. Commission? Sure.
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve LU-2019-0082 based on the ability to make the required findings and subject to the conditions of approval contained in the staff report.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carries 7-0. E3, ZA 2020-0002. Discussion and possible action regarding a zoning map amendment to change the zoning from conservation reserve to single family 1 acre for properties created as part of the North Canyons estate and located on the south side of Kelvin Road and on Cratchit Court, Corain Court, Gabriel Court, and Danielle Court drives, APNs 008-816-07 through 008-816-35, 008-81405, and 008-81413.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Planning Commission may recall seeing this when you reviewed the Master Plan Annual Report and you recommended to the Board of Supervisors to include it in the work program as a mapping correction. The Board of Supervisors followed your advice. So it's before you. In 1978, the zoning of the property was Conservation Reserve, which is a 20-acre minimum lot size. In 1979 and 1980, special use permits were issued to allow 1-acre lots to be created. Consequently, the setbacks per the single-family 1-acre zoning have been applied to this area, even though it's in the Conservation Reserve Zoning District. You might recall that you had a variance request on this. I believe it was Commissioner S. Wine said, why don't we just fix this? So it's before you to fix it. We had a master plan amendment a couple of years ago that Commissioner S. Wine initiated as well. So this request is really a cleanup that will make the zoning consistent with the existing development. All but one of these lots is already developed. The lots are all roughly at 1 acre. They're already being subjected to the standards of the single-family 1 acre zoning, with the exception that per the mapping, there's a 60-foot setback from the industrial zoned property. That will continue to be the case. When you consider a zoning map amendment, you consider three required findings of fact. Staff has addressed those findings in the staff report and been able to make those in the affirmative. The staff is recommending approval of this request to that you recommend approval of this request to the Board of Supervisors. I'm happy to go more in depth on this, but again, there's not an applicant on this because it was initiated as a mapping correction as part of the Master Plan Annual Report. Thank you.
Questions for staff?
Yes, I have one. So were all the residents that are inside of this notified of the change, and they understand what the – doesn't sound like there's really any impacts, but there wasn't any issues?
Everybody within this boundary received a courtesy notice, which was a letter from me initially explaining the situation, and then did receive formal notice of this public hearing. I received a handful of phone calls from people just verifying it was just a correction and didn't really change development potential, just a cleanup. And by the conclusion of each of those calls, the folks I was speaking with were satisfied. There may be folks here in the audience who are within this area who have questions and who I haven't spoken to, but we did the courtesy notice initially, which was sort of just me explaining it, and then the formal notice.
Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? Does anyone in the audience like to comment on this item? Nope, hearing none. We'll come back. Any further discussion or motion?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
Since it was my suggestion.
All right.
I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of the zoning map amendment ZA-2020-0002 as presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries 7-0. Item E4 and E5. Oh, do we take these together or we just read them and then do them? I'm sorry. Heather, shall we take them together or read them separately and then discuss them at the same time?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. LU 2020-0001, discussion and possible action regarding a request for a special use permit for a 34-unit townhome development on property zoned retail commercial located on the northwest corner of Clearview Drive and Single Sage Drive, APN 009-125-12. And concurrent with that is SUB 2020-001, discussion and possible action regarding a request for a tentative subdivision map to create 34 single-family lots on the 2.75-acre parcel zoned retail commercial known as the Silverview Townhouses, located in the northwest corner of Clearview Drive and Silver Sage Drive, APN 009-125-12. Heather?
Thank you. The subject property is 2.75 acres in size and is zoned retail commercial. The property is surrounded by both commercial and residential uses. A residential use is a conditional use in the retail commercial zoning district and therefore requires a special use permit subject to the supplemental standards outlined in Division 1.18 of the development standards. The applicant is proposing a 34-unit single-family attached development and is therefore requesting a tentative subdivision map in addition to the special use permit. There's no maximum density within the non-residential zoning district subject to meeting the height, setback, parking, and open space requirements. Units will be two-story, approximately 27 feet in height, and will range in size from 1,397 square feet to 1,460 square feet, and include both two- and three-bedroom floor plans. The buildings will include clusters of two and five units. Each unit will have a single car garage, private porch, and balcony. Each lot will have a minimum of 250 square feet of private rear yards. There will be an additional approximately 0.78 acres of common open space throughout the development as well. Primary vehicular access to the project site is proposed from Clearview and Silver Sage, and a second connection, which is the easternmost connection here, is proposed along Clearview. And this secondary access will be emergency access only and will be gated. It will not be available for use by residents and will be reserved for emergency services only. Interior roads will be 22 feet wide and be signed for no parking, and off-street parking will be provided throughout the development. Parking standards are per Division 2 of the development standards, which allows for the director to consider an alternative standard to the parking standards identified. The applicant proposes a reduction in the parking standard from 85 spaces to at 2.5 spaces per unit to 68 spaces at 2 spaces per unit. 34 guest parking spaces are provided throughout the development, and each unit is provided with a single car garage, as I stated previously. Additionally, while not counted towards the total parking, each unit will have a minimum 20-foot driveway, which will serve as additional parking as well. The parking reduction has been approved and is supported by data from the Institute of Transportation Engineers. The tentative map is conditioned on the approval of the special use permit. The proposed lots will range in size from 1,746 square feet to 2,160 square feet, with the average lot being 1,845 square feet in size. Included within the lot boundaries is the building footprint, roof overhangs, rear yards, front yards, and driveways. Proposed setbacks are 10 feet to the house and 20 feet to the garage, side setbacks of zero for all interior lots, and 1.5 on the exterior lots, and 10 feet minimum rear yards. The periphery boundaries will be a minimum of 10 feet along the northern and western boundaries and 30 feet along the southern and eastern boundaries. The Planning Commission is authorized to approve a special use permit upon making the seven required findings of fact. Staff was able to make all findings in the affirmative, and is recommending approval of the special use permit subject to the conditions outlined in the staff report. As we've discussed with past projects, there are four supplemental findings outlined in Division 1.18 of the development standards. In order for the Planning Commission to approve a special use permit for residential use in a non-residential district, two of those four findings must be made in the affirmative. Staff has found that the project meets finding A and that the project site is not located along primary commercial arterial street frontage, with Clearview being a minor arterial and Silver Sage being a minor collector. And finding B, because it is part of a 13-acre mixed-use employment area. The other uses within this 13-acre area are commercial in nature, including a bank, as well as commercial parking lots. And this residential development will create the intended mix of uses within this 13-acre mixed-use area. The Board of Supervisors is authorized to approve a tentative subdivision map following the recommendation from the Planning Commission. Staff has made all 12 findings in the affirmative and is recommending the Planning Commission recommend approval of the tentative map based on the findings and subject to the conditions included in the staff report. Staff does have a minor modification to condition 27, just to add some clarifying language. It would read, at the time of recordation of the final map, a private homeowners association or similar entity must be formed to provide maintenance for internal privately owned and maintained streets, common area, and landscaping, including landscaping within the right-of-way. Private maintenance must be described in the CCNRs. The city will not maintain these facilities. Staff has not received any public comment regarding this project. Louis Cariola and Chris Baker with Manhard Consulting are here on behalf of the applicant. Louis does have a brief presentation, and I'm available for questions.
Can you put the first map back up? Can you put the first map back up? No, that one. The street, the entrance on Clearview, you said is going to be gated and only for emergency?
Yes, the easternmost entrance would be gated.
The easternmost, so that the access is pretty much a U then?
Correct.
Okay.
Where those two,
the two accesses,
are the entrance, primary entrances.
It's more L-shaped.
Okay.
So there's access from Silver Sage and there's access from Clearview.
All right, so the other road that comes out to Clearview is the one that's not necessarily open. All right, I misunderstood then. Thank you. That's the one that's closed. Okay. All right. Any other questions for staff?
I have a question. On condition 27, is the stormwater facility indicated on the map? Is that also a requirement, or is that going to be maintained by the HOA?
Stephen Poteau, development engineer. Yeah, the private storm basin is maintained by the HOA also.
Thank you.
Mr. Tindall.
So what is the definition of minor arterial roadway? Because I'm pretty sure Silver Sage and Clearview, I wouldn't consider them minor arterial given the amount of traffic on those two streets. So I'm just kind of wondering what the criteria is for defining those as minor arterial.
Yeah, so the Transportation Department has a map that designates the different streets, and it's based on current volumes as well as the city's master plan. So it includes where we intend to send traffic.
Any other questions for staff?
I have another question.
Okay.
We're sort of related to Hope's question. On other projects, we have required that all street frontages be improved. Are they Is there any kind of improvement that they're going to be required to make on Clearview and Silver Sage?
They're required to do street improvements on Clearview. And if my memory serves me correctly, there's existing improvements on Silver Sage.
Would that include sidewalks?
If I'm mistaken. Yes. Hope you have a condition.
Because they don't really show up on the plan. Heather, could you put the landscape plan up, please? Okay, I guess they are clearer there. Thank you.
Mr. Perry, you have a question?
Okay.
Any other questions for staff?
Mr. Pote, I was kind of looking more for numbers as far as traffic volume is concerned, as far as a minor arterial roadway, because obviously the traffic is going to increase for Clearview and Silver Sage. So if there's a numerical calculation that you use to determine whether or not those are minor arterial, because like I said, I drive those roads quite a bit and there are no minor traffic issues on those streets.
Dan Stuckey, city engineer for the record. So I think to answer, I don't have the actual volume like cutoffs for those different off the top of my head. I'd have to look. I know our transportation department, it is volume based. So principal arterial, minor arterial, collector, local street, all of those have different volume kind of ranges with them. That's one of the methods used to determine and classify those roadways. But as Stephen mentioned, they're also looking at forecasts. They're looking ultimately what we want to do with our transportation network across the city and classifying them that way. So even streets that may have lower volumes today, they may be, you know, kind of master planned out to be a collector roadway in the future, if that makes sense. So I don't have off the top of my head what exactly that number where the volumes, once they exceed it, all of a sudden it gets reclassified. But there are some ranges that they look at. I'd be happy to give you that information. Okay, I will.
And on I was just going to say on the frontage improvements, the reason it's not specifically called out is that they do show those improvements in the submitted plans, the sidewalk, curb, and gutter, with the exception that one of our conditions calls out an ADA ramp at the corner. That's the only part that they weren't showing in their improvements.
Okay. And the developer?
One more question for city staff. Something I just noticed that I may have just missed on other ones similar to this. Number 20, condition number 20, the sampling tap must be included in a common area of the project near one of the entrances. Is there a project-specific reason for that, or is that on all of them and I've never seen that?
It's not on all of them. It's based on the water system and how close other locations are where they can sample from the water mains.
So there's no concern, it's just getting proper sampling
it's
locations.
Just the spacing between this location and other locations where they can sample.
Cool, thank you.
One more, all right.
Sorry, I would be remiss if I did not bring into highlight the impact on the Carson City School District, which already overcrowded, and I feel like that and the affordable housing issue, which I believe we're going to be talking about tomorrow at the Board of Supervisors retreat, but always affordable housing is a huge issue in this community, and I'm not sure whether this development is going to meet any of the needs of the affordable housing shortage. So those are obviously two concerns that I always have with any new development is school overcrowding and affordable housing, because no matter whether we run, we can't hide from those two issues, and we should be focusing on them at some point in time or another.
Okay, anything else for staff? All right, sir. Have you read the... the conditions of approval and they're acceptable to you?
Louis Cariola representing Manhard Consulting here on behalf of the applicant, Mr. Mark Turner. He's also in the room if you have direct questions for him. Regarding the conditions of approval, Manhard has discussed the requirement for private roads with Mr. Turner. Again, he is here to have a further discussion regarding that matter. We do have some reservation about accepting that condition as currently stated. As previously mentioned, there is a retreat with the Board of Supervisors tomorrow. And I know private streets are on the agenda for discussion. So while at this point we're not, and again, Mr. Turner's here, I don't want to overstep my bounds. But at this point, we're not disputing the conditions, but we would like it to be put on the record that we do have some concerns with that requirement as worded. Okay. I did also have a couple slides if I was...
The change to number 27 is acceptable to you, however? The one that we just talked about?
At that point, it would still...
It has nothing to do with the road.
Well, it still sort of, I suppose, addresses private roadways, so only in that sense.
Okay.
I think we would like that to, again, just be on the record. And I'm sorry, I'm struggling here with the toggling. Yeah, you had my excellent picture of downtown Manhattan.
Yes.
Yeah.
I could probably just speak to your landscape plan if that was up. I don't think I do. I don't think there's any new material that Heather didn't cover. So.
Well, would you want to go ahead and proceed then? If we can get your pictures up, we'll look at them.
I think I can.
Okay.
Maybe if you just put the landscape photo up, I could.
Tamara, can you put this computer up?
We've got it.
I think we're going to just go.
Okay, that's fine. I'll just play with it. Oh, here it is.
So just a couple points of clarification. After Heather's excellent presentation and staff report, I don't know that I'm going to have much new to add. We did change the tentative map a bit through the process of working with staff up until our submittal and throughout our submittal. And the number of units within each little block did change. So I believe Heather might have mentioned between 2 and 5 units per block, and that is actually at this point between 3 and 5. So there are 4 four-packs, 3 five-packs, and 1 three-pack. The street improvements on Clearview and Silver Sage were already alluded to by Stephen. Condition 16A does require an ADA access ramp to be installed at the corner. Heather did mention the 30-foot setbacks on the east and southern sides. Those are per code and in accordance with a recognition for there to be a separation from existing residential development and zoning. Additionally, there are 34 guest parking stalls dispersed throughout the entire development. And again, as Heather stated, 20-foot driveways are included with each unit as well as 1-car garages. And then my final point, I think just looking at this slide, it's the perfect one to demonstrate this. The requirement for open space is for 250 square feet, either private or public, within the common area, when I say public, for each unit. This design includes 250 square feet of private open space included within the lot for each unit. And in addition, there are, I think, another 34,000 square feet or so within the common area. So the requirement calculates out to 8,500 square feet of open space, and this design includes almost 44,000 square feet. With that, I can conclude my presentation. And again, Mr. Turner is here if you have applicant-specific questions. Thank you.
Did you say there is or is not any on-street parking?
There is not any on-street parking
just
allowed.
The width of the road, primarily.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions for the applicant? Mr. Perry?
Yes, thank you for that description. I have a couple. So there are overhead power lines along Silver Sage and along Clearview there, a major three-phase line along Clearview. Does that stay or does that get buried or does it get in your way? It looks like it's going to be right over the top of your trees there.
Mark Turner, the applicant, for the record. First off, I want to welcome Rich to the Planning Commission. I think that Carson City is very lucky to have a guy with his experience and depth of knowledge. He's a very smart guy, and he'll be a great addition to the Planning Commission. We have no plans to relocate those lines at this time. If you're familiar with the project that we've done at Mills Landing, there was also a high voltage pass through there. Are you familiar with that one?
I'm not.
That's across the street from Mills Park, kind of behind the surf-through car wash and United Federal Credit Union, and bordered by State Street and Carson Street. Those lines are big lines. We had some discussions with NV Energy initially about potentially wanting to put those underground. We thought that would aesthetically be a pleasing thing, but upon receiving the cost to do that and the time frame, it would blow your mind, the cost to put lines of that size underground. It actually was probably more than the purchase of the property. It's that much money to do those major lines. So we don't have any plans to underground those lines at this time. When things are landscaped, we choose a plant palette that is compatible height-wise with other obstructions in the area, like power lines, using plants and trees whose growth is limited to a known quantity and is not going to end up in those power lines. Additionally, we'll be maintaining our own landscape in there and trimming and pruning as necessary through the HOA. So I hope that answers your question.
That does. Thank you. I was just curious about that because those were major lines, and I'm assuming that's why you oriented the houses the way you did and not back them up to the lines.
Yeah, that was our goal there. Again, boy, if we could do that in a manner that was even approaching affordable, we'd probably do it. But it's surprising, actually.
So my second question deals with drainage here. I took a look at your design here and went and looked at the property today. And I see just up to the west of the property, there actually is some kind of stormwater pond.
Yeah, there's a drainage basin that I believe handles some water from the commercial development along Clearview and Carson Street there. We've been working with this project for, well, over a year, and we've taken some opportunities to go out there and look and see what happens there. The soils there are quite sandy and perk at a very fast rate, and I have not been able to see the accumulation of any significant amount of water in that basin for any period of time. That was of concern to us. It was gone virtually as quickly as it went in there. If you go out there and you grab a handful of that soil, it's pretty sandy stuff.
So it's a infiltration pond.
Correct.
It doesn't go anywhere.
And this one here, our pond here, is actually going to be infiltration most of the time. I'm sure there's going to be some events where it gets full and it has to spill out through an overflow access out into the next stormwater facility. But I would expect we would be able to corral most of the water in there and have it sink into the ground where it should go anyway.
Is there a fence around it then, once you have it built?
It's not deep enough to require that. It's actually kind of an open space area, so it's a gradual slope on the sides, and then the bottom will be landscaped. And we have similar structures in Silver Oak that we've landscaped and connected to the drip, and so we have plants and shrubs and trees going in those. And when you do have water events, the water goes out of there pretty quickly, so it just ends up being some free irrigation for us.
Thanks.
You bet.
I did notice, speaking of stormwater, that on your western street over there, the fall is only about a foot and a half. Is that sufficient for this? It's relatively flat.
Yeah, it is relatively flat, but, you know, we will, you know, the engineering department sets standards for that sort of thing, and we'll make sure that the appropriate grades are in place as required through engineering design and engineering plan check. I think that's one of those things that usually doesn't get missed either on our side, on the design side, or on the city side through the plan check.
Are there any other questions for the applicant? Nope. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. If I could, I just wanted to give you a little bit of food for thought here about the concept of private streets. I'm keenly aware of the issues that we have with the streets in Carson City. In fact, I advocated for the fuel tax years ago in a forum at the Brewery Arts Center. As someone who's built a lot of streets and continues to build streets, I'm keenly aware of the cost of those. And unfortunately, we don't have a mechanism in place for creating the funding that's necessary to care for the streets in this town. This particular development here, you know, if we go private streets, that would preclude the use of our neighborhood as an emergency pass-through if there were a significant or serious accident at the intersection of Clearview and Silver Sage there. So just something to think about if we didn't go private streets. We're always open to different forms of addressing the street problems. One idea that we came up with for addressing the care of the streets was at the time that we would be issued the last certificate of occupancy for the last unit in that neighborhood, that we would go ahead and do a type 2 slurry seal on that street, which would extend the life of that significantly if, in fact, the city wanted to have the ability to use that as an auxiliary access in case there were a significant accident at that intersection of Clearview and Silver Sage there. Just something to think about. I think that I completely understand where people are coming from on concern about streets, how they get maintained, who maintains them. But the bulk of our problem with the streets is with the streets that we already have and the streets that aren't necessarily new but older, 10, 15 years and beyond. So I'm not sure that privatizing streets, especially something like this, actually does much to solve the gargantuan problem of street maintenance in Carson City, and sometimes could have some unintended consequences, like the inability to use that for a pass-through in case of an accident. So just something to think about. I'm just like you, concerned about our community and how we address these problems, and unfortunately we haven't come up with a great solution for the streets yet, but we're going to have to at some point. And the amount of money that's going to be needed to maintain a repair is a pretty big number. So we're going to have to really look closely at that. Commissioner Tingle, just to address your comments about affordable housing, I've been building houses in Carson City for close to 30 years now, and this is the most affordable way we can do a fee simple residence for people nowadays. The days where we had single-story 1,000-square-foot houses on 8,000-square-foot lots, there's just no way to create that anymore between the cost of land, the things we do from a code standpoint today versus what we did 30 years ago, and the significant amount of cost that's been added to houses as a result of this additional feature and that additional feature. None of those come at a free cost. And, you know, granted, houses that were built 30 years ago seem to house people just fine here in town. We don't have the option of building like that anymore. So when we take into account the energy codes that we have to comply with and the expense of the equipment on a heating and cooling basis, as well as water heating, the types of windows and insulation that have to be used to comply with those things, they are just not cheap, and there's no way to do them affordably or cheaply, I would say. So
from what I can see as a home builder who's spent most of my career building houses, this, for the foreseeable future, is affordable housing or attainable. I'm not sure that anything's affordable anymore, but by the time you get done with your ground improvements and all the things you need to do, it's just expensive. I'm happy to answer any questions for anybody.
Okay, two things.
Sure.
One way to possibly mitigate some of the expense of your road maintenance is an impact fee. And I know there's no appetite for an impact fee, but it might be something that we need to start considering.
Well, I think that's one means of potentially solving the problem. However, the big problem with the streets cannot be solved with impact fees on new construction, because frankly, there's just not that much new construction left to be built in Carson City. This town is on its way to being built out. So, what do you do? I mean, if you're 90% built out and maybe there's 10% left to build in town, you can't solve the whole problem off of that 10%. There's just no way to do it. There's a lot of ideas that have gone through my head about how you create the funding that's necessary. But if you're going to do something, you got to do something that solves the whole problem and not a tiny part of it. And then, you know, leaves the large question, what do we do with the rest of the town? What do we do with those other areas?
And I understand your point. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about this particular development and you're concerned about having these streets being private, mm-hmm. to where the city doesn't maintain them, mm-hmm. if you charge an impact fee on the purchase price of the homes in this particular development, that those funds would be set aside for that maintenance. And the affordability... And I know y'all have heard this before, but when the median income of Carson City is $57,000 a year, that's the median income. Current residents, first-time home buyers here in this community, are not going to be able to afford to purchase these homes. So,
I would love it that there's an alternative from an affordability standpoint. I would just love it.
Well, and I have an option for you because mm-hmm. I have a group. Mm-hmm. They did a presentation at our annual meeting last year for financing for affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to share it with you. So,
anyway. Yeah, maybe we can grab a couple of topics sometime.
Let's stay on our topic.
Sure. Sure. So, sorry to digress there, but just wanted to.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your insight. It's appreciated. Is there anybody else in the public that has a comment on this item? You please come forward.
Hi, do you want me to talk into the microphone?
Yes, and I want you to sign in on that sheet right there.
Hi, I'm a resident who lives in the South Point area, which is right there off of Clearview and Silver Sage.
State your name, please.
My name is Mary Siders. My concern is that Clearview is a very narrow street, and I wondered if there is any indication that street was going to be widened and put a turn lane, because when you make a left turn when you're heading east on Clearview and make a left turn heading north on Silver Sage, that's a pretty tight corner right now. And having all the additional traffic coming through there, my concern is without a turn lane on Clearview, that is going to, it's just going to pose a traffic issue. So is there any... I haven't seen any indication that there's going to be the road widened with a turn lane.
Okay. Did you sign in? We will not comment on your questions. Staff will answer them when we're completed.
Oh, okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. My name is Michael Tanchek. I live at 740 Clearview Drive.
Here.
Oh, green. Okay, there we go. So, thank you. My name is Michael Tanchek. I live at 740 Clearview Drive. And basically the first house you hit on that side of Clearview going east from the proposed subdivision. I didn't get a notice of the hearing because I think I live more than 600 feet away from where it's supposed to go in. Traffic has come up. That's a good item. There was a traffic study done. This goes back to when they were going to try to put Salomon through to Clearview few years back, that might even predate a few of you folks. NDOT did a traffic study, and about 7,000 cars a day used Clearview at that time, which is a pretty substantial number of cars. The freeway coming in helped a little bit to alleviate that. I think this goes to what Ms. Tingle has to say. We're still a major bypass for people trying to get up to Walmart, Costco, that whole shopping area up there coming from the east, mainly because it's more convenient to come in on Edmonds and then cut across on either Koontz or Clearview to get to that section of town. So there is, as Ms. Tingle pointed out, a lot of traffic up there. A lot of the folks, too, going north and east, they will take Clearview because that's the first stoplight they hit. Take Clearview, go down to the stop sign at Silver Sage, then cut over to Koontz or else keep going down Clearview. And what they're doing is they're avoiding the traffic signals at Koontz and the traffic signal at Eagle Station. So the traffic is an issue there. I would also, the stormwater facility there, that you saw about, there's a pond. I don't know how many of you have been there. It's a pond that's behind the shopping center there. It's in the northwest corner of that property. I know because I've had a dog caught in there behind the fence. Water is an issue. I've got some great pictures of people kayaking and wakeboarding in the pond in Mayor's Park, which is at the corner of Center and Koontz, after a major rain. There's a lot of water comes down there. They've had flooding, they've had flooding issues up, the bottom of Voltaire Canyon, things like that. So there is water that'll come through there and it can create a problem. Another thing that concerned me too is I was reading through some of the, I didn't read all 134 pages. I'll admit that right up front. But it was stated that the property that's between me and this proposed subdivision, is 1 acre single family. And I checked the map, I think it's the Planning Commission's website. And it's one of those bright yellow areas, which I believe is, high density. Now, that is going to affect me because that, I'm the first homeowner you're hit there. And what bothers me is, the idea that, okay, now we have a compatible use, right? Because now we've got a bunch of people slammed into these 2.5 acres. So why not slam them into that? And I don't know how big that parcel is. It's considerably bigger. So why not do that? So I don't know how that parcel there is zoned, but that would definitely have an impact, at least on, my quality of life such as it is. It's a nice plan. I like the plan. I just don't like where it is. Call me a NIMBY, whatever you want. But I don't think that's compatible. I think it should stay retail commercial. And that's because all the use north and west is retail and commercial. All the property south and east is one acre minimums. And I realize, the great late Marv Texera once pointed out that we weren't exactly a Better Homes and Gardens neighborhood down there. Gotta love Marv. But still, we're down there for a purpose. I mean, across the street from me, so you're looking at, the next street down, basically you've got the vaqueros, the Mexican guys, that's where they keep their horses. There's 19 or 20 horses down there. I've got a roping arena my neighbor to the north has got a roping arena out there. I mean, this is kind of a rural area and we like it that way. That's why we moved down there in the first place. So let me see if I have anything else I want to. This is better than a 200-foot tall flaming oil derrick. I will give you that. And you have to have been here a while to know that one, what that one means. Clearview being a minor arterial, I would really question that. Also, in terms of the houses that are going in down there, now we've got that new community that's going in on Eagle Station. behind Kohl's. We've got, you know, I don't know how many units that is. We've got people coming in there. We got that, whatever the hell that, they're building up there above the Fandango. We've got those folks coming in. I mean, that's not online yet. They're still working on that. And as I understand, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, isn't there something else housing-wise that's going to go in on the other side of where Save Mart is, up above where they're doing
so,
that retail?
So we're only talking highway? About this one project.
I understand that, but it's a cumulative effect issue with the number of people that are moving into this area down here. So, you know, that being said, you know, it's a nice plan. I like, you know, from an aesthetic standpoint, I like it. It's the wrong place. And with that, that just concludes my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Did you sign in?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anybody else that would like to comment on this project? All right. Heather, do you have any comments or answers?
Yeah, I can answer Mr. Tanchek's question regarding the zoning. The zoning for the property across Silver Sage is single family 1 acre. And then I think the master plan is medium density residential. And then I think Stephen can answer the questions with regard to traffic.
Yeah. So there's also some concerns about flooding and drainage. They're not in a FEMA flood zone. They'll be required to do a technical drainage study to show that they're detaining that additional runoff. They talked about widening of Clearview. I sat down with the city's new traffic engineer, and we looked at that Clearview there, and there's just not sufficient space on the north side there to get any extra width. We also talked about the need for a traffic impact study, and this project's well below the trigger for a traffic impact study. We can require it anyway if there is a need, but looking at the area, even with the cumulative effect, based on where we have existing traffic signals that are routing people to Carson Street, the transportation department did not feel that they needed a traffic impact study at this time.
Mr. Chair, Lee Plamo, Community Development Director. Because I work closely with Public Works on long-range planning projections and things, I want to point out that the transportation plan that designates these streets, what they are, and what the capacity is, looks at what these properties are going to be developed are at medium-density residential and high-density residential and commercial. There's a lot of vacant property along there. The transportation plan for streets in Carson City planned out accounts for those properties being developed. It's not like all of a sudden today we're going, oh, those are going to be, somebody's going to build on those. They're planning out years in advance for the traffic. And I know, you know, we've talked about whether this is arterial, and that's out of my bailiwick, but I know Carson Street is an arterial. You know, saying this is minor, but just to give you an idea, I know Carson Street, William Street, those are arterials, and there's probably a couple others on the map, just to give an idea of the volumes that arterials are carrying.
Any other comments from the public? All right, let's bring it back into the commission. Lee, I was going to tell you something about this later on, but this is probably an appropriate time. This is the second project we've looked at that has private streets. And while I understand the problem that the city has with maintaining streets, I think it's also not a good idea to continue to plan for every development that comes across our table to have private streets. I think the city has an obligation to some residents that they will take care of their streets unless those residents choose otherwise, instead of having it imposed on them. Now, in this particular instance, I can also make my own mental argument about the fact that this is a quasi townhouse apartment house development, and I can almost justify in my own mind that these streets can be private and that's okay. But I think the trend that we're seeing is very disturbing, and I don't think it's right for us to start to impose upon the developers and the builders in the community the problems that the city government has in maintaining the streets. I have a problem with that. I just don't think it's right. And having said that, I'll get off my soapbox.
Thank you for the comments. I knew you had an issue with that, and was going to mention that later. But this is a good time. I think the Board of Supervisors is soon going to take up the issue in terms of providing guidance as to what the codes should say, how what the requirements should be. We're going to discuss it with them tomorrow. As a matter of fact, I think the condition as you have it, as has been amended, is the way it is, based on guidance that we've got so far as of today from the Board of Supervisors, who are the policy makers on this. So that's kind of why the condition is written as it is today. But Mr. Turner's comments are very appreciated, and the board needs to consider those, and any action you may take today should be considered with the knowledge that ultimately the board's going to make a decision on that policy.
Okay, well, I can accept the conditions that we've got today, but I think this is something that needs some immediate attention. Other comments from the board on these two items? Let's see if we can get them taken care of.
Commissioner Doors, for the record, I'll start with the streets. I think, just since we're quickly putting in opinions, I think that the way it seems the city staff was doing it, yeah, I agree with it. I think that given, if we look back to that Anderson Ranch project, and given, you know, I don't think any of those are really going to be used too much for getting from neighborhood to neighborhood as through streets, but it seemed like the city kind of erred on the side of, hey, let's pay for these streets because they could be. So, you know, I feel like they're doing a pretty good job of looking at these neighborhoods and figuring out any possible way these streets could be developed or used to go, you know, by the public as through traffic. And if they can, we seem to be paying for it. So given this particular development, there's just not going to be any through traffic. You know, my opinion is I think that is more than applicable here. And I think that the way city staff is approaching it, for the record, seems to be fair in my mind. Schools is another one that is always big on my mind. You know, it's a concern of mine, but I don't think that it's fair. I wanted to address it because it's in here. I don't think it's fair to put the burden on the builder in any way, shape, or form. I think that burden is on the city to, you know, we need to be able to provide schooling and adequate classroom sizes and availability for children that, you know, so we are a more conducive environment to building. So I don't know that was initially a concern. I sort of reconciled that one. Traffic, everyone's talking about that. Honestly, I think that the traffic will probably be better than if we put a regional commercial or a retail commercial building in there. Just less trips per day. It probably is a very low traffic outcome there. The only issue that I really have that I can't reconcile, I know other members of the board or the commission are pro lowering the parking requirements and getting less parking spaces, but it worries me in this location to have not a lot of parking. I can personally get a little bit past it because of the 20-foot driveways, but it is a small amount of parking, and that's only two spots per unit, period, and there's not going to be any on-street parking on Clearview or Silver Sage there. So I don't know. For me, parking's a little bit of a concern. I'd like to see more spots in there. The other stuff, I think that these guys did a pretty good job on creating creating a plan that's conducive to the local area and a nice little buffer between commercial and residential. So those are that's what I've gathered. Thank you.
Commissioner Preston, did you have a comment?
I have one comment, but I have another thing that I want to talk about, too.
Please go ahead.
Okay. Mark, you always do a great development. So, you know, definitely keep that in mind. And I think that this is probably the highest and best use for this piece of property. What my concern is something that happened to one of my clients recently. And so I want to put this out here. is that currently what's happening is we have a lot of developments that are approved that don't come to the Planning Commission. In addition to that, we have the ones that are approved that are coming through the Planning Commission as a SUP. When these are coming through, they're seeing them, the public is seeing them, and sometimes I even get confused as to whether or not, even though the permits have not been pulled, as to whether or not they're actually being considered as an impact on the community. So I wonder if that's impacts when they talk about the traffic studies, when they're talking about the sewer, when they're talking about the water and so forth. Because my particular client was in a PUD that had adequate sewer. However, there was a property down, I mean, you could even see it from the property. It was probably close to 3/4 mile away. And they were impacted. They were indicated that they were going to have to be come up with upgrading a sewer that was under capacity on the other side of a major arterial. When I look at this, and the question was, that's because there's been an SUP here. Well, this SUP has been here for 10 years and continues to rotate every year without actually anybody pulling dirt on it. So if you have that out there and you have the approved developments and we continue to do this and they're planning in the future for these type of things, when are we going to pull the trigger and say either build it or start over and we pull that allocation out? I mean, that's my question here. And like you said, I am big on doing what you want to do with your property. But I'm also looking at some of these things are like bookmarks in here and saying that we are bookmarking these places and we're bookmarking this many units and we're bookmarking this and we're bookmarking private roads and public roads, which have never been built. So that's my comment on that. The other thing is, Mark, I don't see where you're going to put your trash cans. That's my other deal.
Anybody else? Mr. Perry?
Sure, the new guy will take a go at this. Sorry. Coming from a different view. But, you know, I think this development here is consistent with the master plan of the development that should be. It fits in between commercial and low-density residential, so there's a transition zone there, and that's exactly what our zoning plan and our master plan should show. I concur with the developer that it's difficult to build homes that are affordable without going to smaller and smaller lot sizes because of the costs that are associated with that and all of the roads and utilities that they put in. So, and I'll just throw my 2 cents in for roads, okay? Because it sounds like it's a discussion now. And actually, when I first heard it at the last meeting, that was kind of an eye opener to me because I'm not used to that. And most cities do accept roads, unless it's, you know, some type of interior development type thing. But I think in some respects, and maybe this is an argument for the supervisors, obviously they're going to make a decision on that. But I live in Lakeview, and the city paves and maintains my roads, and they plow them, and I pay property taxes. These people are going to pay property taxes too, but they're also going to have to pay to plow their roads, and there's a fundamental fairness issue that eventually may enter in on that somewhere. I get the issue. I would ask one question, like in Silver Oak, are all those roads city roads? Or are they maintained by a homeowners association?
Those are public roads.
Those are public roads. Okay. So this is a recent change. So
in Silver Oak, the roads do not get plowed.
So that Silver Oak is a big thoroughfare for getting to the college and getting to the store from the Upper West Side.
Some of the roads in Silver Oak you couldn't get a plow into, because they're relatively narrow, I think. But anyway, just for comments, thank you.
Any further discussion? Is anybody up for a motion? All right, go ahead.
Okay. I move to approve special use permit LU 2020-001 based on the ability to make the required findings and subject to the conditions of approval.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. I'll try again.
I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of the tentative subdivision map SUB 2020-001 based on the ability to make the required findings and subject to the conditions of approval.
Second.
Subject
to yes, subject to the modification of number 27. All right.
Second.
All right. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. All right. The next item on the agenda is number 5. Before we take that item up, we're going to take about a 5-minute break.
6-minute break?
6-minute break. All right. I'd like to call the Planning Commission back to order. Item E6, SUP 10-115-2, discuss some possible action regarding the review of a special use permit for an asphalt plant and aggregate crushing facility on property zone general industrial located at 8013 Highway 50 East, APN 008-611-35. Hope.
Mr. Chairman, I need to make a disclosure.
Yes.
Please.
Is your microphone on?
Yes, it is. Can you hear me okay? Okay. Thank you. So I have a disclosure to make on this one. NRS 281A-420 requires me to disclose a conflict of interest and abstain from voting when I have a disqualifying conflict. In my private commitment, I serve as a member of the State Environmental Commission. Approximately a year and a half ago, the commission heard a complaint regarding Tahoe Western Asphalt and ultimately decided to levy a fine and admonishment to the company. My role as a planning commissioner is separate and distinct from my position on the State Environmental Commission, and my membership does not impact my judgment and ability to make an impartial decision. I am making this disclosure out of the interest of full transparency and not because of any actual conflict of interest. I believe my independence of judgment on this matter is not materially affected by my commitment as a member of the State Environmental Commission, and I can remain impartial on this matter. Because Nevada's ethics provisions only require abstention in clear cases, I will be voting on this item. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Hope?
Thank you. In October 2018, the Planning Commission considered an amendment to a special use permit for an asphalt plant and aggregate crushing facility. During that meeting, the Planning Commission conducted a public hearing and approved the requested amendment subject to modified conditions of approval. Those modified conditions of approval expanded the hours of operation, identified improvements to address odors, and included a requirement for a one-year review. The condition on the one-year review was specific, that the commission would conduct a hearing and that the noticing of the hearing would be consistent with Carson City Municipal Code 1802045. The intent of the one-year review was to evaluate the adequacy of the conditions of approval vis-a-vis the findings of fact. In November 2019, the Planning Commission conducted its one-year review. As part of that review, the Planning Commission modified the conditions of approval to modify the hours of operation to require the installation of a regenerative thermal oxidizer and to review the special use permit again in October 2020. The decision of the Planning Commission was appealed to the Board of Supervisors. After the November 2019 Planning Commission meeting, but before the Board of Supervisors meeting, staff went to Fernley to tour the asphalt facility there. That facility makes a binder, and it's hot, if you will, 24/7. The plant manager in Fernley explained that the regenerative thermal oxidizer is the correct piece of equipment when a plant stays hot. But when a plant fluctuates, i.e. they heat it up because they have an order, but then they let it cool down, they don't keep it hot all the time, it wouldn't be the right piece of equipment. As the Board of Supervisors restricts its review to the record the Planning Commission creates, and this is new information, the staff requested the Board of Supervisors refer it back to the Planning Commission so the staff could advise you of this new information. Staff has researched objective measures regarding odors and resolved that the only objective measure is to send the city code enforcement officers out independently to make observations. With that, staff is recommending the restoration of Condition 17, as was identified in 2018, to state the operator shall utilize EcoSorb in operations to suppress odors, and to add a Condition 20, which will state the city code enforcement staff will monitor on-site odors a minimum of 3 times a month and maintain a detailed log. The log will be presented to the Planning Commission at its October 2020 meeting. Notwithstanding this, if the city code enforcement staff observes odors from the plant in the residential area of Mound House 3 times, the review of the special use permit will be scheduled for the next available Planning Commission meeting for review for the, of the special use permit. I'd now like to speak to the February 14, 2020 letter from Simmons Hall Johnston. On February 26th, the Board of Supervisors referred this item back to the Planning Commission based on the new information I've just identified for you. I requested that the applicant provide info it would want considered by the staff by February 14th so that it could be addressed in the staff report. These two items do not equate to the Planning Commission has a predetermined agenda to institute additional arbitrary and capricious conditions, making it impossible for Tahoe Western Asphalt to comply with its special use permit. The letter indicates the applicant only had 5 days to formulate a response. The Planning Commission took this up in November, 3 months ago. The staff requested that the Board of Supervisors refer this matter back to the Planning Commission as the staff had new information. The applicant does not have an obligation to submit new information, although has indicated he's pursuing new equipment with NDEP and can certainly advise the Planning Commission of this if he so chooses. No response was required by the applicant. It was a courtesy to allow him to provide additional information for consideration in the staff report. The applicant has also indicated the Planning Commission is complicit in the vendetta to shut down this business's operations. That is not true. The Planning Commission has lawfully held public hearings and attempted to identify conditions that would cause this conditional use to meet the findings of fact. More than 5 people have provided testimony to the commission. The commission creates its own record and takes actions based on that record. At the November 19, 2019 Planning Commission meeting, Robert Matthews from Tahoe Western Asphalt participated. He also participated in the October 2018 meeting. Mr. Matthews was well aware that odors were an issue. He agreed in 2018 to utilize EcoSorb. He heard the Planning Commission express concern in 2018 regarding odors and the efficacy of the EcoSorb, and he was aware that the Planning Commission requested to review the special use permit in 1 year to determine the adequacy of the conditions. This item has been properly noticed. The item before the Planning Commission today is to provide the staff with an opportunity to provide the information to the Planning Commission that the staff did not have in November 2019, so the Planning Commission can consider it. The new information is that, in staff's opinion, the regenerative thermal oxidizer is not the correct piece of equipment. City staff learned about and verified the success in Fernley due to the utilization of the regenerative thermal oxidizer based on conversations and meetings with staff from NDEP and the City of Fernley. Based on their input, this from more knowledgeable groups, staff put it forward to the Planning Commission. The letter alleges a baseless investigation. The Municipal Code 1802.095 states that the Commission, upon its own motion, shall request that the Director investigate the conduct of any applicant under this chapter to determine whether grounds for revocation or reexamination of a special use permit exist. Per Section 1803 of the Municipal Code, the director means the director of planning and community development or his designee. The letter questioned why the planning manager was involved in the investigation. The director has the authority to designate the assignment. The Planning Commission operates under the framework of the Municipal Code Title 18 and primarily NRS 278. The Planning Commission does not operate under NAC 445.B and does not have a 30% threshold requirement. The letter questions investigation or revocation. The Municipal Code 1802.095 outlines the process for a show cause procedure for a special use permit. The Planning Commission may stop an investigation, or it may proceed to an order of revocation, or anything in between. Nothing has been presented to the Planning Commission, and no action has been taken. The letter indicates that Tahoe Western Asphalt has proactive solutions. The staff looks forward to hearing what those solutions are. The District Attorney's Office also has comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ben Johnson, Deputy District Attorney, for the record. I don't want to be repetitive, but I do want to hit on several of the points that Hope made, because I do take issue with several of the unsupported accusations and insinuations of this letter. First, there's an insinuation that there's been a predetermination by this board regarding the outcome of this item, and that's absolutely not true. What had happened was that staff asked if there was any information that the applicant would like to provide that could be considered by the commission at this hearing. This is a regular practice. This is something that's offered to all applicants and which many applicants take advantage of. This doesn't indicate that there's any predetermination by this board. Staff makes a recommendation that's contained in your staff packets, your board packets, and then the commission has the opportunity to review that and make a decision. That's not any kind of predetermination of the outcome. Second, at the Board of Supervisors, the applicant agreed with staff's request to send it back to the Planning Commission, and I believe even indicated that that was a good idea. If anything, that gives the staff or gives the applicant even more time, even more due process to be heard again, to make sure that he has an opportunity to be heard. There's no complicity at all in anything unlawful, and, you know, I frankly find that accusation offensive. Staff and this commission has complied with CCMC and NRS at all times. There are additional claims that the applicant was not given notice, but this is also untrue, as Hope stated. The applicant has been advised of all the steps all along the way and even had the opportunity to appeal to the board, which they did. Finally, I'd just like to say that, to the contrary, the city has been working with the applicant all along this entire process, and the letter is simply just full of hyperbolic allegations that aren't supported by fact or by law. Thank you.
All right. Now that we got the ground rules, as of today, which special use permit is in effect? The one we passed in November was appealed, went to the supervisors, was pulled, and came back to us. So is that one in effect, or is that in limbo? And if it is in limbo, where are we as far as the approved special use permit that we're operating under?
The action taken in October 2018 is the rules, if you will, that the operator needs to be following at this time. Your action of November 19th has been appealed, and the appeal is still alive.
All right.
With our last meeting about this, we got a list of dates and times that we'd already been out and observed the smell, or not observed the smell, whatever the outcome was. I don't see that in here. Am I missing that?
There's a memo in here from the code enforcement officer with an update since the November meeting. and I believe he's been out to the site twice per his memo and has not smelled the odors either of those two times. And I can find that memo. It's an email, actually. Oh, no, it's a memo. Actually, I just found it. It is about midway through your packet, and it's a memorandum from William Kobarger, code enforcement, dated February 13th. And it states that pursuant to your request, I'm providing the information from this case from November 6, 2019 forward. Number of complaints, 19. 17 of them were odor complaints. 2 were hour of operation complaints. No notice of violations were issued. And there were 2 visits to Mound House, one on November 25th, one on November 26th, and no odors were detected at either during either of those visits.
Okay.
Is there any way right now, and I wasn't quite on top of this, I guess I didn't think about this till we were sitting here, but is there any way to identify, to see the list from the last one, that, you know, it would have been 20-something visits? And
I believe it's in the packet. I'll look for it.
Thank you.
Hi. I just want to make a statement.
Actually, I did just find it, if I could. I'm sorry. It's dated November 6, 2019, and that one indicates there were 99 complaints, 98 were odor complaints, 1 was a complaint on hours of operation, no notices of violation were issued, and there were 6 visits to Mound House, one of which there were strong odors detected. And that one was when we contacted Mr. Matthews immediately. He indicated the propane was low and he was running too hot. So that information was from October 24, 2018 to November 6, 2019, and that memo is in the packet.
Whereabouts?
About 3 pages after the staff report. And if you look at the it looks like this, if you want to just eyeball for it.
Thank you.
Commissioner Tingle, did you have a comment? I'm sorry, I thought you were raising your hand.
I am.
Oh, you guys changed places.
I know, we do.
I'm sorry.
I mean, I look at this and I am absolutely aghast. I truly am. That the code enforcement during that time only did this. I have to say is that when I sat in this meeting last time, and board chair at that time was Sadler, and he said that he actually smelled it going up the hill, and he used to do asphalt. And I thought, okay, you know, whatever. Okay. A couple weeks ago, I drove up that hill, and I smelled it, and I went, what in the heck? And so when I'm driving up the hill on a sunshiny day, and I can smell that asphalt on a Saturday, we've got an issue. I should not be smelling it before I get to that bridge, period. And I think the other thing that was kind of funny about it, too, was that my spouse goes, can you smell that? And I went, oh, God. Yeah, it's there. It's there, and our code enforcement people need to be enforcing after hours. They need to be enforcing on weekends. This Monday through Friday thing, you know, when regular hours are, I mean, these guys are pretty savvy. You know, they're supposed to be actually getting permits to do it on a Saturday. This was a Saturday, and I did check that there was no permit.
Not only that, the week that we're talking about, for the record, was Thanksgiving week, a week that a lot of businesses are closed. Also, for the record, out of 6 visits on the previous one, and I talked about this last time, out of 6, 5 visits detected an odor. But, you know, the two consecutive days in November did not. However, the 6 visits prior, 5 of them yielded an odor, for the record.
I think there are 2 issues that we have to wrestle with. First of all is that odor itself is not necessarily a violation of the air qualities. It's a nuisance, but unless it's sustained, the Nevada environmental protection people will not cause, will say that that's necessarily a violation. The other half of that is we are constantly playing he said, she said. And we have the requirement is that we have some sort of arbitrary and recognized proof. We can have all the people that are going to speak tonight are going to tell us the same thing we know they're going to tell us that they told us before. We're going to hear from the asphalt people, and they're going to tell us what they're doing to make it better. As part of a review, we have to find some way to develop data so that we can say, without a doubt, this is what we're doing. I think the recommended motion to the adjustment to the special use permit is a step in that direction. However, I don't think it generates enough data.
I'd like some clarification, too. Didn't we actually say that if they were going to fire it up on a Saturday, they had to notify us?
That's in
number of times that they could do without notification, I believe. There's two or something like that.
Well, and I'm sorry, but for clarification's sake, it wasn't two consecutive days. It was November 25th, 2018, and November 26th, 2019.
Is that a typo? I don't know. That's got to be a typo. I didn't notice.
Is it a typo?
I suspect it's a typo because he provided the information since your last meeting. Mr. Chair, if I may, they are authorized to work on Saturdays without special permission. It's Sundays that require special permission. And just so the commission is aware of which finding, we always say when you consider a special use permit, you need to make the 7 required findings of fact in the affirmative. What we're talking about when we talk about odors is finding 2, and I'm going to read this for you. What it says is the proposed use will not be detrimental to the use, peaceful enjoyment, economic value, or development of surrounding properties or the general neighborhood and will cause no noise, vibration, fumes, odors, dust, glare, or physical activity. So that is the finding that is the focus of this discussion, the issue where the findings, the municipal code findings, not NDEP, because they have their own rules. We don't enforce their rules. But the city's code says this is a conditional use. It may only be established if the Planning Commission can make the 7 required findings in the affirmative. And the question is do the conditions of approval address finding 2?
Well, and in the current operating SUP that we have, at that time the commission made those findings of fact because that got passed.
Correct. What you had in 2000, well, it was approved in, I think it was 2011, 2010. In 2018, what happened was the applicant came forward to this commission requesting expanded hours of operation. You conducted the public hearing, and based on what you heard, you modified some of the conditions of approval, and you did grant him the extra hours that he had requested.
Question for staff. In regards to what the chair is talking about, in gathering more data, do we currently have an investigation underway, or can we initiate another investigation and as part of that have code enforcement go out there more often than 3 times a month, or somehow can we implement something greater so we can gather more official data?
Yeah, Lee Plummel, Community Development Director. And so, yeah, I've directed the code enforcement more recently is going out 3 times a week right now to develop data and obviously trying to go out on days and noting when they're operating.
Well, and to go along with that, and I had talked earlier about this with Hope, is the fact that if we're going to try and generate some data 3 times a month for the next 9 months, it's only going to give us 27 data points.
Well, I think the point of that is not the report. So the 3 times a week is to develop a data set while they're operating to report on the investigation for compliance. On an ongoing basis, that's not sustainable with a small code enforcement staff that has to do other things to spend every day in Madhouse. Well, so that's
true.
So that's the reason to reduce. That's more of a maintenance schedule after this initial period of gathering the data to come back to report on the investigation. They have some data now recently. During cold weather, they weren't operating. So there was a period recently through the winter when there was no operations to gather the data, but now they're operating again.
Well, it seems to me that if we're talking about the next 9 months, there should be, and we should probably also try and get some cooperation from Lyon County and let them help with this. But it's...
That's the other point. When I had the chance there, the Lyon County Code Enforcement Officer that was here before the Planning Commission last time no longer works for Lyon County, so we've lost that connection, but a new one was just hired, started this week, had communications with him today. Hope Sullivan here, we talk to him, and we'll meet with him to coordinate so that we do get some help on the ground from the Lyon County Code Enforcement side to have the verification of the smells come from him as well.
Well, and Lee, will you reconcile then the recommended motion versus what you just told us? They're opposite.
That's what he wants.
No, right. The condition is the long-term maintenance, assuming they're doing something different now that's controlling the smell and it's not an issue. We are still currently this month and can report back under the investigation direction the results of the investigation. If your action is today three times a month, that's, again, like I said, that's a maintenance schedule of monitoring it, not this report to on the investigation that was directed also.
I think that was December.
Yeah, in December, you directed staff to start an investigation. So December, like I said, December, January, when it's cold, they're operating very little, and we're just now getting into a time period when we can collect data.
Well, but in October of this year, we're going to get a report. If it only has 27 data points on it, I can't see how it's going to be helpful.
So we should come back to the Planning Commission sooner than that regarding the investigation that was directed on the director, which is a separate action from the special use permit.
And if the investigation yields a smell three times, will that also trigger this safety mechanism here? Or are they like
notably
separate?
You have the ability to evaluate the investigation separately from the basically. So I think that's kind of to summarize. If this condition gets in place, you have this condition that's ongoing and for the period of that special use permit. If we come back through investigation and you find, based on our more recent checks and investigations, that you feel there's reason for show cause to revoke the license, you can take such action before October.
Okay. Would you then read to me condition 20?
But condition 20 there's a special use permit that's you're considering and an amendment to that, and then there's the investigation for show cause that's a separate.
No. In our packet, there is a condition 20 to the special use permit. And it says, code enforcement staff will monitor off-site odors a minimum of three times a month and maintain a detailed log. The log will be presented to the Planning Commission at its October 2020 meeting. Notwithstanding this, if the code enforcement staff observes an odor from the plant in the residential area of Mountain House three times,
The review of the special use permit will be scheduled for the next available Planning Commission meeting for review of the special use permit. That's a new condition that we're considering tonight, yes.
I find that to be consistent with what I'm saying. I'm not...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a new condition. That's okay. Separately than the condition, if I'm understanding this correctly, there's also the investigation which is going on, which also yields its own smell tests, if you will. So they're going to be up there a lot, but as far as the condition that we're adding, it seems like that's just kind of like a safety net for them, for us to put on an official special use permit, that if we smell it three times, we're back here. And we'll also readdress it.
Okay. Can we hear from the, are any other questions for staff? Can we hear from the applicant? Is that appropriate?
The staff initiated this.
Yes.
And so there's not really an applicant involved
okay.
in this. So
right.
I just don't want one party to be treated differently like another than another. I think it's all public comment.
Okay. All right. In that case, if there's nothing else, then we'll open this for public. You have something? We'll open this for public comment. For those of you in the from Mound House that would like to comment, you're more than welcome. What I would ask you to do is we've visited with you several times and we know what happened all the way up to November. I would like to hear, I know you have your concerns and your complaints, but I would like to hear any changes, if there are any, since November to the current date. You know, because We're trying to decide as a board where we are and what people tell us. And it would be helpful if you do that. It would also be helpful if you all could keep your comments to about 3 minutes. Yes.
May I?
Yeah.
Also, just to sort of get in front of some stuff, you know, I know these processes can seem long and confusing, but it is the Planning Commission's prerogative to have the best interest of the community in mind. So I hope everyone can keep that in mind. You know, it's a long process. We're trying to do the right thing and make it so we can do the right thing permanently.
I have a question to begin with.
Well,
yes. I was here in November. My name is Michelle Busk, and I live in the community. I was here in November, and what I understood was the investigation was to investigate that plant out in Fernley. It was not to start another investigation, which we've already been through. I mean, wasn't last year the investigation for the meeting in November that we almost got his permit pulled, but we decided to give him a chance to buy that machine? I mean, that's what happened. I was here through the whole meeting. That's what you decided. Now you're deciding all over again to give him another 9 months so you can investigate. And unless you're up at 3 a.m, that's, you know, the investigation, because I believe me, they knew when to turn it on and turn it off.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mark Simons. Neither of these folks next to me are with me. I'm on behalf of Tahoe Western Asphalt. I've been here before.
Yes, sir.
Unfortunately, there does seem to be some predisposition. I'll address a little bit. Ms. Preston, you indicated a couple weeks ago you smelled asphalt, right? Can you tell us the date?
I can't tell you the exact date. I could look at the calendar and look at it.
Within
but the
last
thing was, your plant was working, and it was within the last 2.5-3 weeks.
Okay, because the plant has not been working in the last 5 weeks. So that's just one of the indicators. And let me take us back to why we are here today. We're here today, and I became involved because back in November, there was a meeting on the 18th where this planning commission bought into a bunch of complaints, a systematic effort by the homeowners. Last time I was here, I also gave you the data, 225 complaints made by five people, 95% of the complaints, 226 made by five people. And we will be submitting, in addition to this panel, is we've gone back and we've pulled all the electricity data to demonstrate that a majority of the complaints that are being made as to operating and odors are at times when the plant is not operating. So we're very comfortable. That was at my direction, to know that a lot of these complaints you're receiving are not substantiated. They're not based upon anything other than vendetta to put this company out of business. Now, in addition, November 19th, when we were here, no notice was provided to the applicant. And instead, what staff had recommended, given a lack of substantiated concerns, staff is not recommending any further action. That's what staff recommended, because that was their job, to take in consideration what were the complaints. What did this panel do? This panel changed condition 13. And by the way, condition 13 does not require a permit on Saturdays. Saturdays are operational. Sundays provided with 72 hours notice. So before you start accusing us of not getting permits, make sure you understand our conditions. Now what you did is you imposed regenerative thermal oxidizer, a $2 million piece of equipment, without notification, without investigation, without an understanding what that is. Of course we appealed it. And by the time this was occurring, our permit with the NDEP, full compliance. Yes, historically there was. I represented, you might be familiar with that, I represented them on that, paid those fines, got the complaint into compliance. And it has stayed in compliance. So here's what this board does. November of last year, imposes a $2 million piece of equipment that now we find out, you hear, wrong piece of equipment. Could have put the business out of business, and then the city would have been faced with the $40 million lawsuit because there was a lack of knowledge and understanding of what was transpiring. So then we come back. There's a process of that appeal. This board wants to conduct an investigation. I gave you the data. Then we have a council person up here saying, oh, I've smelled it. I smelled it in the past. So clearly there's sufficient data to launch an investigation. And as that investigation unfolds, the data is presented to you as to how this business is operating, and that what was acquired, being imposed, was inapplicable. EcoAbsorb has been being used. We're not responsible for its efficacy. We've been using it. That's our condition. We've been in compliance with the condition. We're in compliance with NDEP. NDEP has regulations. They oversee air quality in the state, including odors. And there are certain requirements that are to be complied with before these type of witch hunts occur. Okay, so moving forward, we then have, as I understand it.
Excuse me. Ladies and gentlemen, you're welcome here. Please keep your comments and everything else to yourself. We want to afford everyone the same opportunity. No one's made comments when you comment. Please, a little courtesy. Okay? Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'm not Your Honor.
It's a habit. I apologize. So then we have the district attorney feeling offended that there were some strong words in the letter. Of course there were. When you're imposing a $2 million piece of equipment on a business that is the wrong piece of equipment, yes, that sends the wrong signal, doesn't it? So does my client want to be at odds with the residents? No, but there's no help for that. The residents have a plan. They want to put this, as we say, out of business. And then there's this perception that there's already a predisposition of this board to revoke. Of course, Ms. Sullivan said that in front of the Board of Supervisors, that this body had implemented the procedures to complete the revocation of my client's special use permit. So that was stated in front of the Board of Supervisors. If it was a misstatement or spoke out of turn, that may be one thing. But we have to go on what was said on the record. So, unfortunately, we do have that perception. Now, what we have is, as I understand it, an addition of condition 20 under the special use permit conditions of the 2018. Is that what I understood correctly earlier?
This commission has not taken an action. You can speak to the staff report, which is a recommendation.
Okay, so as I understand it, based upon what staff said previously, is the special use permit with the conditions of the original approval are still in effect, and they want to add an additional condition 20. Now, again, the condition 20 doesn't go to our operations. That goes to a directive to code enforcement to undertake whatever activities they think are appropriate. We don't believe it should be an appropriate condition of our special use permit, as it has nothing to do with our operations. It's maybe some oversight of the city. And lastly, we do not believe that the investigation is continuing to ongoing, as that is not, there's been nothing presented as to any investigation, who's undertaking the investigation, and what the investigation may or may not entail. Lastly, the three times a month testing, who's going to do it? When's it going to be done? What methodology is going to be imposed? Somebody goes out there and sniffs the air? At least the NDEP has what's called a nasal ranger. They have that because they're vested with ensuring the air quality of the community, including odors. Not some subjective person or not somebody who has been pumping complaints to this board or to code enforcement that are not true and are false. And there should be an opportunity to at least have on our side somebody there that can be objective or at least have a response so that we aren't faced with, oh, I went out and I smelled this six times, and guess what? The Planning Commission's ready to pull your permit. There has to be a measure of fairness, and it hasn't appeared to be fair that this process is favoring the complaining parties who make unsubstantiated. I'll present that to you. I'll present it to staff so that you have the data points that you're talking about, the false accusations of operations and odors when the plant isn't operating. So you'll see that, and clearly you have seen, and you've heard them tonight, there are a lot of people who have a belief that there are odors or would like this business to go out of business. I understand that. But it's zoned general industrial. The special use permit is in place, and we've been in compliance. And I'll leave this, my remarks, with the last point. There has been we've been communicating with staff about the alterations to the plant because efficiency equals money. So as long as you're more efficient, it's more profitable. So the company is investing with additional equipment that will make the plant more operationally effective with particulates. We believe that to the extent that there are belief that there's odors occurring, that would also take that into consideration. However, we have to work through the NDEP to get that accomplished. But that has been in process. Staff is aware of it. Do you have any questions of me?
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Matthew Wilkie, for the record. Sorry, here real quick. So briefly before I forget, I'd like to address, you hear council say that people are going to talk about arbitrary smells and what they think and what they feel and perception. Well, I can tell you since November of 2019 when I bought my home, very recent, these people have been dealing with this since 2016, since production. The smells I smell, they aren't thoughts. They're not imaginary. So I kind of resent council's marks regarding that my thoughts aren't factual thoughts because I'm not a scientific piece of equipment. So with that, I denounce the council's remark regarding that. Going back with 2011 is when the first initial SUP was issued. The initial first SUP was issued. But if you look back, production from Tahoe Western Asphalt, production did not start till June or July of 2016, I believe, which is a five-year time frame when he got his business license to production. Why wait 5 years? That's what I want to know. If he truly, in my opinion, mind you, this is all my opinion, if he truly cared about the city, building up the city, starting up a factory, growing the city, he would have started up production, started bidding on projects in 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, in my opinion. So I don't know why there was a delay for 5 years and no production whatsoever. I know that no other business can open a business and do no business in 5 years. I know with, speaking with the supervisors, I know you can't open up a sandwich shop and not sell sandwiches for 5 years and make money. I know you can't open up a real estate development firm like Brad and not selling houses for 5 years or a law firm like the mayor not represent any clients for 5 years. So I just don't understand how they had a business license for 5 years and did not operate until their very first client, from what I can see, and is when they started getting projects from and contracts started building up from the city. So it just seems kind of odd to me that they waited 5 years to for any production of any sort of value to even start making a dime of any sort of things. So since 2016, when production started, there's been multiple meetings by all these residents who have been here way longer than me. And they've been complaining about the smells, they've been complaining about the noises, everything back and forth since the production of 2016. This has been going back and forth between the Planning Commission and Board of Supervisors off and on back and forth since then. I know in 2018, the Planning Commission voted for a one-year additive of that the Ecosorb and put a one-year effect to see how it was working. That was October of 2019. The meeting was 2019, where that one-year review was heard, where we all pretty much came to the conclusion that this additive is not working. So if my concern is if from 2018 to 2019, the Ecosorb was supposed to be used and it was not working, then why are we saying, let's try to use the Ecosorb again, it can work? Wasn't he already supposed to be using the Ecosorb from 2018 to begin with? So why are we going to, do the same thing again and expect a different result? Okay? So between 2018 and 2019, the total of 226 complaints, with 197 from NDEP. From those six site visits, the five times that they could find a smell. You hear people say, yes, it was between five to six residents. I will happen to say a lot of people in our community do work, do stuff. I have a feeling, I don't know who those five people are, but I would like to imagine probably that we do have some retired people there. Maybe they can be home during the day, that, when I'm at work, they're home. They can probably have the enjoyment to be able to call four or five times a week, because they can, and more power to them. They're retired. So in 2019, it's already been decided that this additive is not working. He appealed it. February meeting, it went to the Board of Supervisors, where they send it back to the Planning Commission for more information on how we can operate. So unless they're proposing a whole different chemical or different additive or whatever, how are we going to operate the same thing with a different result? And I do know, and also with the fines that were imposed from the NDP when he did violate those findings, when he had upwards of like $67,000 fines, I did see that he was set upon a payment plan where he did make payments. If a company can't pay a $67,000 fine in full at one time, of course they can't come up with $2 million for a piece of equipment. Of course. So it's the cost of doing business. If you want to open up a tar business, you need to make sure that the community around is not being inhabitable. So when you look at the Planning Commission, I realize that they by the boards, I get the Planning Commission and the board confused, please excuse me, but where they said that they, by their own admission, failed to look at the residents in Lyon County. I find that completely apprehensible that whether it was I don't remember who it was that said, we missed that. We screwed up. We failed to look over the county line. I feel like you owe it to those residents of the county to say, you know what, until we find out what's going to work 100%, this factory needs to be shut down, stopped. I'm not one of these people, and the council's going to argue he's out to shut him down. He doesn't like. No, I would actually love for him to operate, love for him, because I know he's not doing this for the fun of it. He's making money. He's not doing it for pleasure, and he gets kicks and giggles out of it because he has nothing else better to do. So if you can operate within limits and you're not bothering your neighbors, do whatever you want. I live in Mound House. Go work as a prostitute. I don't care what you do. Just don't bother me. And your noise, your smell is coming into my home and it's bothering me. I can see the Bunny Ranch from my house. You do you. You're not bothering me. And that's kind of the same thing. Do any business you want, any business. Just don't let it bother me. And so while all this is going on, I just feel like since the commission's even self-admitted that they failed to neglect to look over the line, they owe it to the residents of that community to stop production, because when that initial application was approved, I feel like if they knew that, yes, there is a community right there, they wouldn't have even approved this. That's my own feeling on this, but I just have also a really problem that a company can be in business for 5 years and the first client is the city, and it's just really odd to me, and that's all I'll speak to that. And also I'll close up with saying is I don't know if it's with Lyon County who needs to be spoken to, but I do feel like, and I know other people have spoken before, that if this is the case, that we either need to be rezoned or something like that, because we shouldn't have to sit there and smell it all the time. And as most of you understand, you've smelt it, Commissioner Preston, the other commissioner, he smelt it on October 16th, going to Utah to go see his family. So it's clearly a problem when multiple commissioners are smelling it, but you know, council will say, well, it's in your head. It's not. And I feel like the board should not allow him to operate with the Ecozord when he was supposed to be using it from 2018 to 19 anyways. So what's up with that? And also the NDEP violations, which he's now up to code on, I do understand that. And with the with the NDEP stating that what is being omitted out is VOCs, or volatile organic compounds. So even by the NDEP admitting, those are volatile compounds being admitted. So, and those are from 1975 standards. So, and I'm glad to admit, so I would genuinely like to know and how to see how we can get these numbers from NDEP updated to current standards, because it is apprehensive, it's disgusting that Nevada operates on 1975 standards. So the fact that, yes, he's now in compliance, but how many of those times would he have not been in compliance if he was up to 2020, 2019 standards?
Sir?
Yes.
We've kind of asked everybody to hold it at 3 minutes.
Yep, I understand that.
And you're working on 10.
I understand that.
Can you summarize?
I understand that. Yes, I totally understand that. Because it's important. And I don't think 3 minutes
is
adequate
to
understand how we feel when...
Okay,
clearly, yeah. So clearly my time's up. So I appreciate you, and you have a great evening.
If you want to finish, but just stay on track, okay?
I feel like I was, so clearly clearly I'm done. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner.
Yes, sir.
My name is Laura Fraker. I've lived in the neighborhood for 30 years. I also did built up roofing for 25 years. And I know when you said you drove by and you smelled it a few weeks ago, residual smell from asphalt sticks around forever. It doesn't go away. It's an oil in the air. It gets on everything. It gets in the trees, the plants, your car, your clothes, everything. I did it for 25 years. I know. I also have a question. On November 24th was a Sunday. Did he have a special use permit to work on Sunday, November 24th? Does anybody know about that? Because we all made complaints to the code enforcement, and they come out, they took our statements, and nobody said anything about that. He worked on a Sunday. What's up with that? I've lived in that neighborhood for 30 years. I know that's not supposed to be there. It's got to go. You yourself said last time we were here about the smell in your kids. How would you like that in your neighborhood? You live over on the west side. You'll never smell it on the west side. That's all I got to say. It's really getting pathetic.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Dave Lockhart, and I also live in the same neighborhood as these folks here in Mount House. Been there for about 15 years now, and I've smelled it around 10 o'clock. I'm not kidding. I do automotive work at night after my day job. I do it for hobby work. I smell it in my backyard. And also when the other fellow says that the only five people are calling, well, that's representative of a lot more people. You know, I've never officially called in, but if I do, okay, that'd be number six. If everybody called in, you'd probably get all 100-and-something folks that live in there. So just because you get five calls doesn't mean that's only five people smelling it. Oh, no, it's way more than that. You know, and I think that's fair. If these guys can run without sneaking up the neighborhood, that's fine. Go ahead. That's all we're looking for. You know, if you want to run, don't bother us. You know, I bought my property. I live there now. I don't want to smell your stuff. I think that's fair. That's all we're looking for. And that's it. That's all I got to say.
Thank you.
Wait. Can you hear me?
You can't. Make it green.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
I'm Bob Lucas, and I'm one of the residents of beautiful downtown Mound House. And you guys last year put this thing on him where he had to give him another year, but this is why you did it, because this guy, he's not telling his attorney the truth. We all know that. They don't know it, but we all know it, because this is not the first attorney this guy's had. He is long on promise, but he never keeps his word. He gets what he wants out of you guys, and hope you can verify that. He gets what he wants, and then he doesn't do it. And if code enforcement notifies him that they're coming out, then he complies, so he can comply. But he's a game player. He'll operate, and he figures it's going to take, people are going to start calling in, and they're not going to be able to get out there for an hour or so, and he's done. And no city employee, I retired from the federal government. No city employee is going to work before 8 o'clock in the morning or after 5 when they get off. And he knows that. And he runs 10:30 at night, 12:30 at night. Now, he hasn't been running for a while because he shuts down for the winter. But he's going to start up in March. And we all, in our neighborhood, we hope he complies. We don't want to put him out of business. I mean, we want him to comply, but he's not going to do it. I mean, we'd like to see it, but he got up here at the 18 meeting and said that he's got this chemical from Standard Oil and blah, blah, blah. And then out in the hallway, he told my wife and I, well, Hope doesn't know what she's talking about. That equipment doesn't work. That's what he said to us. I don't know what he said to Hope. But so he has no intentions of spending $2 million for equipment. He keeps paying. Now, anybody that's paid $62,000 in fines, that tells me something. You guys are pretty intelligent. He would rather pay the fine. It's been over the last 2 or 3 years. It's cheaper to pay the fine than it is to fix the problem. Now, he was part of, I recognized him. He was part of the SEC, correct? So you were in on the fines. But that does him no good, because he'd rather pay the, what you should have done is made him pay those fines up front and see how quick he complied. But it's not going to work. We hope it works, but it's not going to work with this guy. He doesn't tell the truth. So you know all the other stuff's going on, so. And there's more than 5 people calling in. I don't know where these people get their information from, but I'd like to have them come out and stay with us for a week, these attorneys, and see if they change their mind. But they're not going to do that. That's too easy.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Hi, my name is Melanie Harris. I'm also in the Mound House neighborhood, and we've been going back and forth with this for a long, long time, and it's coming up to be spring again, where we're not going to be able to sit on our porches. I have had my swamp cooler taped up for 3 years. I don't appreciate being called a liar. None of us here want to disrupt our lives, get babysitters, get off work early, so that we can come here because we have imaginary smells. And I don't think it's fair of these lawyers to say that about us, because they don't know us, they don't live in our neighborhood, and it's going to start up again, and we're going to go back and forth again. It's just not fair to us anymore. And that's all I have to say, because I've said everything else. I also wrote a letter to the mayor.
Thank you.
I do have another comment, and I'm Matthew Wilkegan for the record. Also, in previous board meetings, when the applicant did speak, he himself did admit to the board himself when it comes to the hours operation, he admitted to the board, I have went over my hours, but he said only twice. Even out of his own words, he admitted operating outside of his own condition. However, you and I both know criminals don't tell the truth. If a criminal says, I stole twice, you know it's more. So he admitted to the board
I only violated twice.
So he admitted to you, I have violated hours. That should be instant revocation, not let's investigate, let's hold hands and skip through the woods to grandmother's house we go. No, he admitted to violating the SUP to you. Only twice, but admitted it to you. On the February 6th Board of Supervisors meeting, to go back, the mayor spoke directly to the attorney for the applicant, one of them that is here, and the mayor directly said to the attorney, you and I both know we wouldn't want to live where this is going on. Please let's try to fix this. Well, of course, these are two wealthy, affluent attorneys who don't live here. These are people that don't care, you know, so they even admit, we wouldn't want to live there. If it's not good enough for the mayor, and if it's not good enough for the council, why in the, should it be good enough for me? Okay? Per the mayor, on the February 6th Board of Supervisors meeting, you and I both know we would not want to live there. If it's okay for the mayor, if it's not okay for the mayor, if it's not okay for council, why is it okay for me?
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Melissa Fraker. I've been here. I started this whole thing up because I used to work in construction also before I became more or less disabled. This has been going on way, way too long here. We have tried to do this and do that. He has paid fines. He has told us that this is going to be fixed. We've been to this council meeting and the other council meeting. I want to know what we're going to do about this because my plants are dead outside. I cannot go out and enjoy my neighborhood. What is that? It states, you read it, Hope, that if you violate certain things like your outside air and all this stuff, that's a problem, correct? Aren't we supposed to stop this by now? Isn't this supposed to be over with and done? I don't know why we keep going over and over this when you guys know the facts. You've seen the facts. He has violated. There has been, I got a petition for when it first started, and there's over 100 people on this petition. What now? We have to close our houses up again for the summer. No going outside. Our children have to cover their faces when they're at the bus stop. You know, when it was a rock quarry, it was great. There was no problem, and that was Mr. Matthews' uncle or somebody anyway. Now, when this asphalt plant came is when we have had a problem. I've helped build this community that I live in. We were there before the asphalt plant was there. I mean, can we stop this nonsense? This is hurting our livelihood, our everything in our lives. Thank you very much.
Please sign in. Please sign in before you go. Yes, ma'am. Is it green? Push it again. There you go.
Oh, it's green here. Okay, I'm looking at the button. My name is Judy Lucas, and I'm sure I'm one of the five. I've got a page after page after page of when we call in, what time we call in, who we've spoken to. Now, how can he come up and accuse us of all this? That makes me very angry. I'm going to tell you, he did it on a Sunday on right around the 30th of January is probably when you smelled it. We didn't smell it because we were gone at a granddaughter's wedding, but I heard about it. Well, my husband and I do not never called in unless we smelled it. We didn't do that. Now, it's been wonderful this whole month. He hasn't. As far as we know, we've not smelled anything. And it's been very nice to go out into the yard. The only thing, we can invite people over. We can't have the barbecues we used to have because we never know when he's going to start his cooking. Now, in June, I fell and broke my arm and split the bone in my arm down to my elbow. Well, I tried several times to go outside to try to get some of the sun. Couldn't do it. I had to go back in the house. So I could never go out there because he would start his cooking. Now, we had a visit from Bill because we reported him doing it on a Sunday. We reported everything in, and I've got it all dated. I'm so angry I didn't look it up. But it was on a Sunday, and Bill from code enforcement and Jason, I believe was his name, came out to our house. And we filed paperwork into the district attorney. What has happened to that? We don't know. We've been trying to find out. Nobody can tell us what happened to it. Now, there was quite a few of us that had called in. There was Melanie who came to our house so he could do it to both of us at one time. There was other people he said he had to go out and get their sworn testimony, basically, and turn it into the district attorney. Now, what's happened to that, I don't know. And this has got to stop. There is furniture out in our backyard. I couldn't figure out what all this dusty brown stuff was on our green chairs. I know. I'd wash it off, and a couple of days later, I'd see it again. Well, all of February, there's been none because he hasn't been cooking. So the ashes are dropping down into our neighborhood. So it's not just the smell. I'm worried about the ashes and what it's going to do to our children that is in the neighborhood, the fire he had. What if he has another fire? If he had one fire, you know, he's not smart enough not to have another one. Well, if he does that, we're all history because it'll blow us all smithereens. And the fire then will go down to Deer Run Road. Now you're talking of $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 homes, and the fire will go down there. Now, the other thing that I want to bring up that we're all thinking of getting all together and doing a class action lawsuit. And we're going to sue him for millions and millions and millions of dollars. So everybody in our neighborhood and down below us, that they live there but they don't own the property like we own the property, will all get $1,000. So we'll have to figure out how many people are in there and sue him for that. Now, whether he'll have it, who knows. But maybe he'll be put out of business and we can live our life again. We are 76 years old, and our life now is being around him. He's sarcastic. He's nasty. And you think this is going to work? It's not going to work, Hope. You can go out there every half hour. He knows how to beat all those people. He knows how to do it. Because we can time him when he starts cooking. And we've all called in, so now he's going to stop. We've got about maybe an hour, and he'll start again. So please, please, for the health of our neighborhood, stop him. Thank you.
Sorry, color.
It's green.
Okay, it's green. Thank you. Dave Lockhart, again, just really quick. She touched on already, but, you know, the property values of our homes exceed over $2 million. If you add all our homes together, that's a substantial, you know, financial value of all those homes in there. And what's more than that is just our health and our happiness. You can't put a price on that. So that's just something else to consider, too. For the dusting, I can vouch for that also. I've got multiple vehicles as a hobby, And I do clean some of them pretty good, so I can tell when stuff's landing on it, too, because I just washed it the day before, because I'm a vehicle nut. So anyway, yeah, he needs to be clean up his stuff or get out, one or the other, and that's all.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? How are you guys doing tonight? So I'm listening here, and where's the common sense? Why can't you put up monitors all around his plant?
You state your names first. I'm sorry. Jerry Jones. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Jerry Jones.
Thank you.
Can it be done? You put air quality monitors around the properties. Nobody has to say, I smell it or don't. They'll pick it up. You don't have to send anybody out three times a month. Just leave it running. Simple. Right?
Sir, we're just
can it be done?
Yeah. We're not here to answer your questions yet. We'll just...
Well, I'm just saying, that's the solution. All right, if you don't want to listen, you can send guys out all the time. They won't smell it.
Typically, I don't do this, but there's been multiple people coming up, and I noticed,
Mark Simons, that it wasn't brought up in the letter or in any of the comments by staff, but we have been providing multiple signatures with contact information and email information for other people in the community that are not complaining, that do not have issues with odors. So that has all been provided to staff. We have extra copies, so be aware of that, that undertaking has been going on so that there is a balance of people in the community. Also be aware that there are facilities that burn waste, and we don't burn waste, so there's other issues with regards. I'm starting to hear things about debris coming out of the sky. So I just want to be aware of that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we do have that information. Sir? We're not going to be here all night.
I know, I understand. And clearly you're not going to answer the question, but I just want to put a statement.
Your name, please.
My name is Matthew Wilkie. And the question I wanted to put out there is, and I understand you're not going to answer, is if you're obligated to protect the interest of the applicant. That's a question. Are you obligated to protect the interest of the applicant? And public input really doesn't matter. That's my question. And the reason why I ask is, during the interview processes, I hear applications with a question saying, while public input is a valuable part of your decision-making, you cannot mirror wishes of the public who come to the meeting or provide testimony because it is your job to follow the standards and requirements of the zoning ordinance, and you are obligated to protect the interest of the applicant. So my simple question is, are you obligated to protect this guy? And that's simply it.
Anything else from the audience? Okay, thank you. You want to take a wag at that?
Sure. Hope Sullivan, planning manager. Just to let the audience know what happens now. A lot of the public comment included questions. The commission now turns to the staff to have those questions answered. So when the commission wasn't answering the questions in real time, it was because they were bundled and I took notes. Michelle Busk, you asked, what is the investigation? So I just want to talk, I want to recapture sort of the procedural stuff because there's a lot here. In 2011, the applicant, a special use permit was issued for rock crushing and an asphalt plant. The asphalt plant portion of it didn't commence till 2016, but the rock crushing had started earlier, and you've heard discussion about this. In 2018, this commission conducted a public hearing on a request to modify the hours of operation for that special use permit. That was October 2018. As part of that testimony, you heard, and a lot of the people here today spoke to you in 2018, about odors, and you heard about hours of operation. The commission approved expanded hours of operation but created certain conditions of approval. Included in those conditions of approval was a one-year review. And the intent of that one-year review was to look at the adequacy of the conditions of approval vis-a-vis the findings of fact. And I read you that one finding of fact number two regarding odors. That was definitely a concern of this commission. In November 2019, the annual review of the special use permit came forward to this planning commission. At that time, prior to your review in 2018 and then during 2018, 2019, I was in conversations with NDEP. Do I know how to run an asphalt plant? Absolutely not. I will say that over and over and over again. You can keep writing in your letters. I don't know how to design an asphalt plant. All I can do is talk to people who regulate asphalt plants, tell them what we're hearing, and look for suggestions on how to solve this. NDEP advised that there was a similar situation in Fernley. They said they had a lot of complaints in downtown Fernley about the smell of the asphalt. That particular operator installed regenerative thermal oxidizer, and the complaints went away.
Ma'am, your light's on. It's shining up here.
The complaints stopped. They felt that would be an appropriate, the NDEP staff advised based on the experience in Fernley, they felt this might be the right piece of equipment for the TWA operation. I also reached out to professional staff at UNR. The professional staff who advises industrial operations in Nevada on permitting issues, and it was Eric Floros, provided me with the information about the EcoSorb. Since the EcoSorb was something the applicant was already doing, that's what this commission said, okay, do that EcoSorb. He said, yes, I'll do the EcoSorb. So that was in 2018. In 2019, the commission said, it sounds like the EcoSorb's not working. Let's go with that regenerative thermal oxidizer. Now, when I spoke to staff in Fernley, they agreed. They had all sorts of smell and odor issues from the asphalt plant in Fernley in their downtown when the regenerative thermal oxidizer was installed and started being utilized, those issues evaporated, if you will. Then I went to Fernley and I'm toward the plant, and that's the first time I was told this equipment works when you stay hot all the time. If you only heat up when you have an order, it's not going to work. So I am now before this commission giving you this new information that I did not have in 18 or in November 2019. No, you get that. Let me get that. Oh, yeah, sorry. Okay. So, yeah, your decision in November 2019 was appealed to the Board of Supervisors. So it did go to the Board of Supervisors earlier this month. At the Board of Supervisors, I requested the Board of Supervisors redirect it to the Planning Commission so I could provide you with this new information. So that's all the special use permit stuff. So that's the procedural stuff. And that's why it feels like we've been here in 18, we were here in November 19, why are we back? We're back because I have to give you complete information. I'm sorry I didn't know this in 18. I'm sorry I didn't know it in November 19. I know it now. I was trying to get information to give you the best information I could. Yeah. Okay. Mr. Simons had quite a few things. But it was interesting because I was quite surprised to hear him say that his client wasn't provided notice. But then I remembered Mr. Simons had to go first at the meeting in December, not the meeting in November. Because he had a party at his house and he had people coming. That was December. It wasn't a public hearing. That was the last item on your agenda that got moved to the first item on the agenda for you to direct the director to start the investigation. When you look at the code, you go to 1802.095, which talks about the whole show, show cause hearing, and it says the director will notify the applicant of any investigation prior to any public hearing. That's the due process.
And you notice the November meeting listed here in that staff report.
Oh, okay. Say that. I don't know what you just said.
And regarding for the November meeting, I have the staff repeat from the staff report for Hope from the November 2019 meeting in which it lists the noticing, which was given to the delivered personally to the applicant and also by email to the applicant and other noticing in conformance with for the public hearing in November.
So comments that the client from TWA, Robert Matthews, did not receive notice of the public hearings held in November is not true. Now, in fairness, I suspect Mr. Simons was remembering the December meeting, and there was no notice because there wasn't a requirement for notice. There was no public hearing. You were directing the director to open an investigation. Condition 20. Mr. Simons doesn't think Condition 20 should be included. That will be up to the Planning Commission. Condition 20 is there specifically based on finding number 2 regarding odors. The investigation status, I think that's been spoken to by the Community Development Director, that the status is ongoing. You haven't received a report because it hasn't operated in 5 weeks, which is what Mr. Simons just told us. A methodology for smells, that's a good question. We looked for a way to have an objective measure for smells. There's not a piece of machinery that you can surround the facility with to see if there are smells in Mound House. You need to go to Mound House and see if there's a smell. Staff is trying to go there to independently verify the smells are here. You've had testimony that there are smells, but our recommendation for Condition 20 is to allow for an independent observation of odors. Mr. Wilkie wants to know why we would continue to use Ecosorb. Don't use Ecosorb then. Don't stay silent on it. And stay, we need a performance standard is what we need, but a performance standard for odors, I don't know where you find that. If somebody can tell me where to find a performance standard for odors short of somebody going out and smelling, I don't know what it is. I've looked. We can't tell him how to run his plant. We're not experts on how to run an asphalt plant. I know from the gentleman at UNR that Ecosorb seems to be a good additive to address odors. Mr. Matthews has indicated he's on board with using Ecosorb. I'm not sure if it's working based on the testimony. So we can remove Condition 17. At the end of the day, our issue isn't whether or not he uses Ecosorb. Our issue is whether or not there's odors. The NDEP standards of the 1970s, that's not really a question for this commission, but Mr. Wilkie made that same comment to the Board of Supervisors, and that was very troubling to NDEP staff. So I would encourage Mr. Wilkie to speak directly to NDEP staff about that because that's actually not an accurate statement, and I'm happy to put him in touch with NDEP staff. Is this commission obligated to protect the interests of the applicant? No. Your job is to look at 7 findings of fact when you consider a special use permit. You listen to public testimony, and you consider that testimony when you consider your findings of fact. You also consider what the applicant says, but at the end of the day, you're looking at your findings of fact. Does input, public input matter? Yes, it does. Does all public input matter? Not necessarily. You may hear things that have nothing to do with the findings of fact, in which case it was said, but you're not laying it bare into your decision-making. Mr. Draker talked about November 24th, a Sunday. No, there has been no permission given to work on Sunday. So the question is, did TWA have permission to work on Sunday, November 24th? The answer is no. Mr. Lockhart indicated there were smells at 10 p.m. at night. He hasn't called in and discussed the property values of homes. Let's see. Mr. Lucas, Again, Hope doesn't know what she's talking about. The equipment won't work. We have to stop. I have to stop trying to guide you on how to design this because we can't design it. We can only look at our performance standards and try to figure out, are there odors, yes or no? If the answer is no, he's fine. There's no issue with finding number two. If there are odors, offensive odors in the residential area, we cannot make finding number two in the affirmative. Melanie didn't have questions. Melissa Fraker, what do we do next? Again, if I could figure out how to objectively measure odors other than somebody going out and smelling them, I would tell you, I don't know what that answer is other than literally sending code enforcement out as much as we can make them available to smell for those odors. And that's what I have. Thank you.
Anything? Yes.
I got a question for staff. Commissioner Wiggins, for the record. Does code enforcement staff work after hours or Saturday and Sundays? And in what conditions would they do that?
Lee Plummel, Community Development Director. We have two code enforcement officers that do this sort of nuisance and investigations that work for the Community Development Department. They do work after hours. They've been out there, I don't know how early, but once like close to 6 a.m. in the morning. So they've been out before hours, and they let them flex their hours accordingly to keep a 40-hour work week. And they also at times do things after hours, which I'm not sure that they've done it after hours here, but it sounds like that might be a time that they need to include in their investigation to consider that. So was the question include weekends? Yeah, I don't.
So here's what I'm getting at with this is why we would allow a very expanded hours of operation when we don't have the staff that's readily available to go all the time to check those hours. That was kind of the point I'm getting at.
But they don't have, well, I mean, it's not any more of a capacity that they have to check fewer hours either.
No, I get it, but they have to be flexible,
yeah,
very flexible, in order to accommodate that we allow a plant to operate on Saturdays.
Yeah.
And no, I'm guessing your staff is scheduled to work Monday through Friday, right?
Yeah, and I think there's an understanding.
So they are going to go at certain times off hours. That I wanted to understand that they would do that.
They do go off time.
But it's special case.
They do go off times at certain hours when required. Yeah, I mean, I think overall in conditions of approval on these things, there comes a point when you have to make a decision based on the evidence. We can't be out there 24 hours a day all the time either. But I can't promise they can be out there on weekends and particularly Sundays, but I can discuss that's a possibility.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I failed to comment on the two final comments. I didn't realize I had gone to a second page in my notes, if I may. Jerry Jones asked why we couldn't have air quality monitors surrounding the facility. This is not, we do not enforce air quality. NDEP enforces air quality. Our focus is solely odors. And having said that, if there are odors right at the plant that don't bother anybody, I think we're okay with that. It's the odors that are going into the residential neighborhood that are concerning. Mark Simmons brought up the petition. That petition has been made a part of the record, is in the packet, and is available in the public binder in the rear. So anything that I received was provided to you. Thank you.
Commissioner Preston.
I have a question for Mr. Simons. You indicated that you actually have electrical data records to show when the plant is operating and when it's not.
Correct.
Okay, great. So how far back do those data records go?
I don't know.
Okay, because the reason I'm saying that is, and they say specific dates and they say specific times, correct?
Right, but just to be clear, I targeted the dates that there we had a list of complaints.
perfect.
So it's not like I pulled every single day.
No, but that's perfect. Because the thing is that if you have the electrical data that says when the pilot is operating, and we see that it actually coincides with the complaints, wouldn't that actually be the data that we would require and see if it's out of operation, out of the hours of operation? Because this is what you're saying that you've got.
No, this is...
Is there a way we could compare that? And are you offering it?
Well, here's what you have to understand. There's been a systematic complaint every day by one or multiple of the residents. So it's not as if you can draw that correlation. What you're trying to say is like, oh, you were operating, there's some complaints. There's a complaint every day, literally every day for periods of time, even dates that there's no operation. And this isn't my data. This is the data we got from the NDEP. So, yes, the plant is going to operate. Any other questions? No?
We have to smell.
Commissioner Doors. Commissioner Doors, for the record. Excuse me. So I wrote a few things down. I think there's like so many things going on with, you know, smells and you know, some sort of identification devices and all that. I think we're getting away from me, like just the bare bones of it, which is really simple. We have a burden of proof. We've had city officials who have verified the smells, and we have huge petitions which outnumber 5 people. So clearly there's a large threshold that has been passed in verifying that these smells are real. They exist. We have city officials that are smelling them on numerous occasions. To speak to the other residents of other places, I mean, that's really inconsequential. You know, that's just inconsequential. You know, the second thing I have written down is, it clearly disturbs the peaceful enjoyment of surrounding properties, which is that condition number 2. So to get back to the bare bones, like I'm saying, we've proven that the smell exists. I mean, as well as we can, I'd say that we've proven that. And we have a large number of property owners saying that it's disturbing their peaceful enjoyment of their property. So to kind of bring that full circle, we did the year. If he wants to add the equipment that he's saying, in this new packet, not the $2 million thermal oxidizer, thermal regenerative thing. He wants to add this new thing. He thinks it's going to work. I think that's great. But we did the year. So, I think it's a perfect time. We have the lawyers up here, which, by the way, for the record, I would have found that letter very offensive myself if it wasn't so poorly written. But we have the lawyers up here saying he's not running right now. So I think he shouldn't be allowed to operate until that piece of equipment is installed. I think we should install another. Hold on. I think we should install another check, just like we did with the EcoZorb, where we should come back, and if this new piece of equipment hasn't stopped it, or even add the code enforcement going out there 3 times a month at a minimum, and if we have 3 smells, revisit it again. But I don't think I fully understand the legal ramifications and why we're removing the thermal oxidizer, but this commissioner thinks that we should shut that plant down due to a health concern until he makes at least another different step in the right direction. Give him more time at that point to verify that it's working, and then readdress after that. But I think that what we're looking at is just more of the same.
Don't have to.
No, I was going to.
So... I have a few thoughts here, okay? First and foremost, I think, and our planner Hope said it, we, the Carson City Municipality, are not in the business of monitoring air or requiring different types of equipment on Class 2 air quality permits. This is a portable asphalt plant, right? So therefore, it operates under a permit that actually is portable with the plant to a great extent, because these things move all over the place. I remember this one from a year and a half ago, and I took another ride out there today and drove around your neighborhood and out to the plant to look at it. And I just come to the same conclusion. This is a really bad place for an asphalt plant. You know, it's 1,200 feet from a municipality, and it's unfortunate that it crosses county lines, but it does, and it's industrially zoned in Carson City, and then we have residential zoning. And it's a westerly wind, and I could see that, you know, there's a hill in between, you know, as all of you know, there's a hill in between it, but I could see very well that the VOCs would blow in certain directions and go over the hill. And I have no doubt after listening to many people testify here and other places that this does occur. So, I mean, to me, it really gets down to this thing right here. We have the seven criteria that I'm now learning about, right? And this one says the proposed use will not be detrimental to the use, peaceful enjoyment, economic value, or development of surrounding properties or the general neighborhood. And it will cause no noise, vibrations, fumes, odors, dust, glare, or physical activity. Odors. So it is odors. I think we've established that. I don't think we need any criteria to say what type of odor it is. You know, it's in the wording there. And clearly, continuing to, I don't know whether the term is renew or what this special use permit is it violation of that. I think the owner of the plant, and I feel for him because I believe these people. I don't think anybody here wants to put this guy out of business or his company. He employs people. I mean, I sat out there today and watched people go into work at the plant. There looks like they're getting it ready to operate. But I think it needs to be picked up and moved someplace else where it's not going to be a problem. You know, that's what asphalt plants are always going to stink. And the NDEP people will tell you that. And if you look at where they are, you know, there's usually someplace where there's not a lot of neighbors. But at the same time, I can't, and neither is it our business to determine is the plant being operated the way it should be with the burners correct and all the things that are in the criteria for the air quality permit there. So, and that's not our business in Carson City, I think, you know, as a planning commission. We're not in the business of monitoring air permits, but I do think we should pay attention to the fact that this number two here is inconsistent. And, I don't know if, you know, the way to do this is to give this applicant some time to pick up and move or how you go through the process of not renewing, if that's the way it works. Maybe that's a question I need to ask city staff here. So, I believe these folks and everybody has the right to breathe clean air. So we probably need to do something here. Are my thoughts. So, Hope, can you outline what the process is?
Okay, what's before you today is essentially the annual review of the special use permit. The special use permit that you amended in 2018, October 2018, and you requested it come back to you in a year. Having said that, and Mr. Simons brought this up, he indicated that I made a statement to the board to the effect of you've started the process towards revocation, which I likely said words to that effect. What this commission has done is you have started the show cause hearing process. The show cause hearing process, as I explained at the beginning, starts with an investigation. So you have directed, and this was at your December meeting, this commission directed the community development director to start an investigation. As you heard the testimony, they haven't been operating. There hasn't really been anything to investigate. And so you also heard the community development director explain to you he'll be sending code enforcement out more frequently once operations begin as part of the investigation to create a data set for you. This is different than the special use permit annual review that you're doing right now. What this investigation does is it looks at the compliance with the special use permit. What can happen is a couple things once you do this investigation. So when I say that you've started the revocation process, that probably was a poor word choice because what you did was you started the show cause hearing process which can end in an investigation. This commission, about a year or 2 years ago, opened an investigation on a different special use permit, and it never went past the investigation. We reported out on the investigation, and we stopped. This board, this commission never asked for a public hearing because you were satisfied with the information you received as part of the investigation. So what could happen is we do the investigation and it stops. Or that's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is we begin the investigate, we report out on the investigation and you say, set up the public hearing, and you keep going through the due process steps, where the other end of the spectrum is an order of revocation. Having said that, there are different things in between stop the investigation, we're done, and an order of revocation, which is amending the special use permit, changing conditions on the special use permit, and so on. So in terms of can this permit be revoked, there's about five different due process steps involved. The first step has been taken, which is direct the director to start an investigation. So I hope that answers your question.
To piggyback on that, so what can be done with what's in front of us right now?
What is in front of you right now is basically you made a recommendation as part of the annual review to include the regenerative thermal oxidizer. I don't believe that's the right piece of equipment. So I would suggest that you remove that condition, and I was suggesting restoring condition 17. If you just want to eliminate condition 17, because we don't really care about the ecosorb, we don't care what he does to address odors, we just care that he does address odors, that would be fine. You could take away condition 17 as well. And then we've added condition 20, because we know we have that finding number 2 on odors, that says, okay, we're going to be okay with a special use permit with these modified conditions, but as part of this approval, we're going to continue to have another report in October 2020, and code enforcement's going to go out at least 3 times a month, and they're going to document, and if they smell it 3 consecutive times, it will be agendized for the next planning commission. So that is what is before you right now.
That is what Community Development Director Lee Plemmel, that's what's before you. That's the action that you could take today. The DA can listen to what I'm about to say and just confirm or not, but I think you could also direct us to bring back the investigation for the report on the investigation, which we could do as soon as next month to continue that process. I think that would be related. That would be... Now, let me put it this way then. I'm hearing that the investigation and the report on the investigation is important, so we'll consider that and put it on the agenda.
Right. But it's only important if we have data.
Right. Yeah. Data is part of it, and you have evidence from both sides that you're going to have to consider. So,
well, but what I think these people need to understand that is if, hypothetically, we went down a revocation route, the first step is already started, and there's a process that has to be followed. It has nothing to do with this special use permit. There's a process that has to be followed. We've taken the first step. The second step will be the report, and in that report, we're looking for data. And then there's a step after that, I'm sure, and another step. But that's kind of a separate branch of this ongoing saga of the asphalt plant. What we're faced with today is, and I finally figured it out, Lee, I think, the investigation is going on. It will continue to go on. It will not stop until sometime when you all present us with a report. The special use permit that they're operating under now is the 2018 special use permit. And the question is, what do we want to modify the 2018 special use permit with, aside from the fact that this investigation is going on? And staff recommended that we take out the $2 million machine and kind of said take out the Ecosorb, and that follows the trend of we're not designing plants and we're not operating them. It's not our job. We're just smelling them. Yeah. It's not our job. So if we do that and then we build into also the special use permit, aside from the investigation, more inspections for the annual review, because we haven't taken out the annual review. We will still have an annual review in 2020 with more data. So is that what we're talking about? Is that it?
Correct. And the one thing you didn't say is what's before you really? The base is the 2018, but you, in November 2019, performed an annual review of the 2018 permit, and you made changes, and I now don't agree with those changes based on new information. So we're revisiting the action of November 2019.
The question on this to staff is, in 2019, we actually specified hours of operation. So this right here, we're taking out the Ecosorb, we're taking out the requirement for, because we're not designing plants, but do we still have the conditions of operations? And if we do have the conditions of operations, as part of our data set, can we ask for and request those electrical data forms to be sent just to staff, not to be put out to anybody else, to see whether or not they're operating within the compliance of the days and times and have a 24-hour, 365-day data set on the electrical.
I'll answer that regarding the investigation. I also want to clarify earlier that when I say, you know, you talk about the data for the investigation, but for the purposes of everybody, that includes all other information and complaints and information gathered from both sides, including from the applicant, the operator on, and I think you just asked for, I think you, the electrical that would
electrical
show
usage.
Hours of operation. That is certainly something that could be presented to us from the applicant that could help identify that aspect of it.
Just to kind of bring it up, the problem in my mind with the electrical stuff is, you know, I own a business. I own, there's machinery in it that I run, heavy equipment, a lot of electricity. The smelliest parts of my business have nothing to do with that machinery. So, and I understand, you know, we want to see the full picture, but I just, for the record, really want everyone to understand that, especially given the fact that it stunk so bad one day because his propane was low, which propane has nothing to do with electricity. I understand I'm not trying to negate. I'd like to see it too. I'm just putting it on the record that, correlation does not equal causation there by any means.
But it'll also show us if he's firing up the plant on Sunday.
Absolutely.
Tell us if he's firing it up after 10.
Agreed. I want to see it, too. I just wanted to add to that that the electricity does not equal smell by any means.
All right. You've been very quiet. Yes, sir.
I got a question for staff, Commissioner Wiggins, for the record. What happened to condition 19? We jumped to 20. Did that get removed? I guess it's not part of it, so it's not material, but.
No, you're right. It should be 19. I don't know why I went to 20.
Okay.
One other thing while I'm still up here talking. My comments to this are that just the operator shall utilize, get rid of Ecosorb or anything else there, but perhaps add commercially available equipment would be my suggestion in operations to not suppress odors, eliminate odors completely. So there's clarity in this permit that no odors are to be allowed. Additionally, I'd just like to comment, I heard both sides of the argument. I heard the attorneys. I heard the homeowners. I think we have to use, personally, I need to use staff as the third party to find out who's telling me the entire truth. If I guess the plant operator has proof that there's no odor because I'm not operating, and yet he gets complaints. Well, those complaints have to get tossed out, right? But if there's evidence contrary, validated by a third party, we're going to have to look at that. So revoking the permit immediately, I can't say that I would support that because I need more evidence from a third party to make my decision. That's all I have. Thanks.
Well, I think the point is we can't. We could not, even if it was on the agenda tonight, because there's a process.
True, but we could make some ridiculous condition like we did to try and put the plant out of business, and then he appeals it, and we're back here. And so what I'm getting at is that process of going overly in our conditions is it can't really be done yet, and I'm saying we need more evidence from a third party before we produce conditions. Thanks.
Okay. Anybody else? Someone want to make a motion?
I have a question for staff. Is there a way, aside from utilizing, maybe if you thought about this, you could fill us in, aside from utilizing city staff per se, is there another investigative tactic we could use to gather operational hours? Number one would be easiest, but then, you know, smell and stuff like that. I mean, do we have to rely on city code enforcement per se, or is there a third party, a different way of approaching this?
Well, there's Lyon County.
We're certainly going to meet with the Lyon County code enforcement to see what assistance we can get with them directly observing the situation. Because we've talked to them, and all they've done, all the current officer has done is report that he's received complaints. It would be helpful to us to actually get a Lyon County code enforcement officer to verify for themselves the situation.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a comment? I understand the process that you're talking about there. At least I think I do. It seems long and arduous. But I gotta go back to, I really don't think that it's gonna change personally. It's an asphalt plant located, 1200 feet from a residential area. And I know we have to have proof. I see here that it's an asphalt plant and aggregate crushing facility, and it was an aggregate crushing facility before it was an asphalt plant, right? So maybe the aggregate crushing facility component of that is not here. I'm not hearing anything about odors from running a crushing plant out there. And maybe this is naive or crazy, but is there a way we can have the plant owner, operator come in and sit down and say, can we help you find another place to put this asphalt plant? I don't know if that's, worth a try or whatever, but, I don't want to see the guy, and his employees just go out of business. Is there another place where this could go, where he could thrive and these people up here could thrive too? So, thanks.
Okay. Anybody?
To clarify, do we need to do anything, or are we going to be hearing the investigative results next Planning Commission? Do we need to add that in?
Well, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm thinking that may be premature because it's like everybody said, he hasn't been operating. Since November, we started the investigation in November. If we had him report at the next meeting, what are we going to learn? I think we have to give it some time to run before you're going to find out any of the answers that you want. So,
now would be the perfect time to move the plant.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to. I feel like things are getting confused. We're here today about an action you took in November 2019 as part of the annual review of the special use permit. And you have a couple actions you could take. You could just say, no, we want to leave everything exactly the way it was. It's not what I recommend, but you can certainly do that. Or you can modify those conditions of approval based on the new information. which would basically supersede your action of November 2019. The investigation's not before you this evening.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. That's ongoing. All right, I'll make a motion. I will move that I move to replace condition 17 with the staff's recommendation for condition 20 in the permit. And that's it.
So to recapitulate, staff's recommended condition 20 replaces condition 17.
Correct. Originally said use Ecosorb, and then in the one that we modified last November, it said they had to put in the $2 million machine.
I liked Commissioner Wiggins' suggestion. Can we discuss keeping 17 but changing Ecosorb to commercially available products / equipment / anything to keep it, you know, so...
We're redesigning this plant for
him. No, we're not. We're just telling him, hey, we know for a fact it stinks without anything. So we know if we let him not use anything, we will be back here. So he has to use something. We don't need to tell him what or how much it needs to cost or anything like that, but he needs to use something. And if that's Ecosorb, I mean, I think there's a major health concern here. I think that allowing him to return to square one is a big mistake.
Mr. Chair, if I may... I really think we need to focus on performance. We cannot design this plant for him. I think they're interesting comments, but at the end of the day, how does the government control how he's running his operations? And he can have equipment that's been described to us as, you know, the best equipment there is, top of the line equipment, and we still have the odor. And at the end of the day, that's our issue, is whether or not there's an odor, not whether or not he got the absolute newest, best equipment. Because even if he has them, we have an odor. We have an odor.
But if we don't add something in there, I feel that there's some culpability in terms of we know with nothing that what we know what we're going to get with nothing. We've gotten it already.
And, we have an investigation that's ongoing.
I just think the city should take a stance on, hey, you need to add something. I'm not telling them what to run or how to run or anything like that. But, you know, it is the responsibility to ensure clean air of the city, as far as maybe not air quality, but I'm sorry, with odors, it's our responsibility and I think that we've crossed that bridge. We've let them do nothing. We've let them do something. I don't know. I agree with Commissioner Wiggins on that one.
Mr. Chair.
To address that, just to clarify what I was aiming at, is I agree. It's performance language. Does it have to be in a condition is my question for staff. I would prefer it to be there. We could change it to the operator shall eliminate odors in operations.
Yes, sir.
Period.
Mr. Attorney. Ben Johnson, Deputy District Attorney for the record. I just wanted to address the points that were made by Commissioner Wiggins and Commissioner Doers. As Hope mentioned, you know, the city's not in the business of designing this plant, and I understand the need for wanting some kind of equipment, but then the problem becomes that, you know, if you're not specific enough, then it's subject to a vagueness challenge. And really, you know, we can't go either way. You know, we can't be too vague so that they have to do something, or too specific so that they, you know, we require a specific piece of equipment. So I understand the concern, but legally I don't know that that's defensible.
What about Commissioner Wiggins' last suggestion to change it to, without misquoting, to change it to all odors must be eliminated?
Mr. Eswan?
I have a suggestion for rewording 17 that will hopefully address both Jay and Alex's concerns. The operation of the facility shall ensure that odors are not detectable beyond the property line. Because you can't eliminate odors. But we can, you know, we're trying to protect the residents. We're not.
Yeah, it's something to anything to that effect. Yeah.
Okay.
And you got to make the motion.
In that case, I'll amend my motion to include Mr. Eswine's number 17, and we'll add 20. Or 19.
19. Renumbered 19.
Mr. Plummel looks...
Mr. Plummel has looks... Pardon? No. We are.
What yeah.
Is 19.
So,
so can someone read the motion?
I will read the motion. If I can find it here. I move to modify condition 17. Well.
Hang on just a second.
I think I got it. I moved, and I'm going to modify your motion.
Right.
I move to modify condition 17 of the conditions of approval voted on by the Planning Commission at its meeting of November 19, 2019, to read, the operation of the facility shall require that odors are not detectable beyond the property line, and to add a condition 19, city code enforcement staff will monitor off-site odors a minimum of 3 times a month and maintain a detailed log. The log will be presented to the Planning Commission at its October 2020 meeting. Notwithstanding this, if the code enforcement staff observes odors from the plant in the residential areas of Mound House 3 times, the review of the special use permit shall be scheduled for the next available Planning Commission meeting for review of the special use permit.
I second.
All right, is there a second? All right. Any further discussion?
Commissioner Doar seconds.
Yes. All right, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? I would encourage the residents of Mound House to continue to complain if there's a problem, if you recognize a problem, but I would also tell you that you need to also contact your own county. Okay, I'll just... that's fine. I'm just saying you need to continue to work on your own county government also.
Yeah, I had David Scott come to the last meeting.
Thank you, guys.
That's why I wanted to make sure that something, whether it's equipment or something.
Yes.
You're the one that's
going to
be done.
Yes, it's his fault.
His fault.
All right.
But that's in a message.
It's not. I'm not convinced. E7. Discuss and possible action regarding the election of a Planning Commission chair and vice chair for the term beginning at the Planning Commission meeting on February 2020. Well, we ran everybody off, didn't we? All right. Is there any kind of a motion from anybody?
I will move.
All right.
That Chuck Borders be, I nominate Chuck Borders for chair of the Planning Commission.
I'll second.
All right. Is there a motion? Is there any other motions? Any other nominations? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. How about a vice chair?
Commissioner Doors respectfully throws his hat in the ring, but he also respects Commissioner Eswine, so I think both would be really good options, guys.
I've already served multiple terms on both positions, so I would respectfully decline.
Anybody else? All right.
I nominate Alex Doors for vice chair.
I'll second. Motion carries. All right. Staff reports.
gotten yourself into.
I did. Mr. Plummel.
Yeah, just some quick reports on items that went to the board in February, a couple items that came before the Planning Commission, the subdivision map on Emerson Street. Those were the with the street, the other street issue before this. Well, I'll mention that, yeah. The other, with the streets, so that was approved. There was a lot of discussion at the board meeting about streets and the ownership of the streets at that meeting. I think they, did they modify the conditions a little bit regarding streets? And I think that's where we got to the condition as modified today in the other streets. Also in February, the Board of Supervisors initiated the process to implement a moratorium on hemp cultivation and product manufacturing. So that will come up on your agenda in March, and we'll discuss that more. Relates to requests we're starting to get for growing hemp, which is basically like marijuana and smells like marijuana while it's growing. So that'll be before you in the next month, and probably some regulations in the following months. Hope has in her hand or sitting there to grab on your way out with your name on it is your packet for the Title 18 workshop next Wednesday on the 4th for the benefit of the public. We're doing that at next Wednesday, March 4th at 3 o'clock here in the Sierra Room, open to the public, taking comments on Chapter 18.02 of the Municipal Code, which is the general administrative provisions. It's our first one where we're taking a real look at all the changes and your opportunity to make changes. It was very time consuming trying to make all the changes in conformance with DA policies and procedures of how to do it, but there's not a lot of substantive changes to it, but we'll have some good discussion on the findings because we have some recommendations for changes to that. So I think that in particular will be the focus of a lot of the discussion, because a lot of the administrative procedure stuff is already established in NRS with timeframes and things and how we process things. So there's not particularly a lot to change in terms of that. And then again, at the March 25th Planning Commission meeting, in addition to the hemp moratorium discussion, we have some other items, a special use permit and a variance for a duplex in single family 6000 zoning, an amendment to a special use permit for storage. I think that's on Fairview Drive to add RV storage, and a special use permit, another special use permit modification for the height of the pump house that was recently approved in Long Ranch Estates. And that's my report. That's all I have. Thank you.
Commissioners?
I got one more thing.
I'll make it quick so everyone can go home. I saw in driving around Reno, actually, I saw they were working on an antenna, like the ones we've been hearing with the cell towers, a cell tower and stuff. And it was a big flagpole. And I think there's one in Carson, actually, coming back, and it might not be one, but coming back down the hill from Reno on the right by Michael Hole and stuff, that's a flagpole, too. And so I just kind of want to put a bug in people's ear that when we see these things, maybe that's a good alternative as opposed to the tree. Because one meeting I brought up a tree and how stupid it looked, and everyone said, no, 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 that's great. And then the next time we heard one, I brought up the tree as a solve-all, and everyone said, no, that looks stupid. So I just saw that, and I thought, you know, maybe this could be a good middle ground for everybody. So that's it.
All right. Lee, I know you're going to that workshop tomorrow, and I think we would really like for the supervisors to decide what to do about these streets, because I'm really conflicted about some of this. I just think it's a bad policy to get into, and, you know, we're kind of floundering around here. If you could press on them that we need some direction.
I'll pass that along. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else?
And again, I want to do the other thing on these SUPs. I mean, they can't go on through perpetuity. So that's one of my things.
I thought the SUPs have a termination date in them when we approve them.
No.
So why then a couple months ago did was Mr. Turner in front of us trying to renew? What was that about? Because that was over by Silver Say or whatever, North Carson.
Maybe I'm not sure what she was referring to, but there the initial approvals and not starting special use permits have a time limit. Otherwise, they go away. But once an SUP is ongoing, it's runs with the land.
Yeah, and I mean that's one of the things that I've noticed,
I think are you talking about the situation you referred to earlier tonight?
That
special use permit's not indefinite. That because it has been initiated, it can eventually expire.
Well, I'm watching like Willow Street that we went ahead and approved the Willow Street those apartments, and those are up for sale. Yeah. Period. And the thing is I'm looking at it going, okay, they went through the hoops, they got us to go ahead and do all this stuff, and now they have a development for sale. And I'm looking at it going, but because it's out there, and because they have it out there for sale, does that mean it goes on to the next person? If they go on and they meet all the conditions, it does, correct? But at the same point, if you're using this as a kind of a benchmark to do your planning for traffic studies, schools, this and that, we've got a bunch of units out there that have been dormant for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah, we approved one today with like we spoke about, with a dormant SUP by the same developer on the opposite side of town for more affordable housing.
But aren't those special use permits, at least I thought I saw read in here, that they're good for one year. If you don't break ground, then you have to go back and require a...
No. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Thank you.
All right. Okay. The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Planning Commission, including any matter that was not specifically included on the agenda as an action item. Seeing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All right, we're adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Don't forget your pumpkins.